Recess is ended. Senator from Cole.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, first, for the benefit of the body, Travis Zimfer from the Missouri Times has been granted permission to take photos or videos in the Senate chamber today.
Thank you.
Mr. President, without objection, the Senate will go to order of business of Senate bills for perfection in formal calendar, and I'd ask you to recognize the Senator from Phelps on Senate Bill 19.
Hearing no objections, the Senate will go to Senate Bill from the informal calendar for perfection from Senate Bill 19, the Senator from Phelps. We currently have...
He has to make a motion.
Oh, I'm sorry. Senator from Phelps.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I move that Senate Bill 19 be called from the informal calendar and brought before the body.
Senator from Phelps moves that Senate Bill 19 be moved from the informal calendar and be brought in front of the board. All those in favor of that motion, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The bill is before the body. We are back on Senate Bill 19, the Senate substitute. There is amendment pending from the senator from the 13th, and the senator from 24th has the floor.
Correct.
Senator from the 24th.
Thank you, Mr. President. To continue, I'm going to continue to inquire of the senator from the 13th.
You may. Senator from 13th, you yield?
I do.
Senator, so yesterday we were going through other states that have right-to-work laws in place and whether or not they have these kinds of broad penalties that are put into place. And you had gone through a list with me, and I think we had finished it. Did you want to add anything about that?
No, and things have developed and changed, Senator, since we spoke together last time on the floor. I noticed on my desk that there is a second substitute for the senator for yesterday's substitute, and I see that the senator from Phelps is over there giving me the eye. So you might want to inquire of him.
Okay, I will do that. Thank you for your inquiry, Senator. Mr. President.
Senator from the 24th.
President, may I inquire of the senator from Phelps?
Senator from Phelps, do you yield?
I do.
You may proceed.
Senator, you were giving the eye to one of our colleagues, and I'd like to know, if I could, what that was about.
Yes. If you all allow me to have the floor, I'm going to withdraw the substitute I offered yesterday and offer another substitute that I will try to explain, and that gives a senator from 13th, I believe,
yes,
chance to redraft her amendment
to
the new sub, and it's some clarification things, so that's where we're at.
All right, so you'd like me to relinquish the floor to you. You're going to send the new substitute forward.
I'm going to withdraw the sub that's before us, and you have a copy of the new substitute.
Well, that's what I'm looking for, because I don't believe that I do.
You should have 05F. We had it distributed earlier. We will make sure you get a copy.
That would be helpful. Thank you, Senator.
Yes.
Mr. President, thank you for being here.
All right, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Senator from
Mr.
Phelps.
President, I ask that the substitute, Senate Substitute 1, be sent back and withdrawn.
The Senate substitute for Senate Bill 19 will be sent back.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, I have another substitute I would like to send forward at this time.
Would you please?
It has been copied and distributed, and so I ask for a waiver of the reading.
All right. Send your substitute forward.
And I move for the adoption of the second Senate substitute.
The reading will be waived. Senator from Phelps, do you care to explain the substitute?
Thank you, Mr. President. I again renew my motion for perfection printing of Senate Bill 19, and I'm speaking to the second Senate substitute. Okay, after some discussion yesterday, it seemed like that there were some points that needed to be clarified, and so we sat down with counsel and attempted to do that. So I'm going to try to explain some of those changes that were made before we just jump right into it. And if you look at the original bill, the grandfathering clause will stay in, It's not listed on the 05 as a new change because we did it in the first substitute. But I'll refer back to the original Senate Bill 19. And if you look on line 14, page 1, which is 290.590-2, in the first subsection, the change there that was made, it a little more clearly, rather than become or refrain from becoming, it's become, remain, or refrain from becoming a member of the labor organization. There were some folks that were saying, okay, if I choose not to stay in the labor organization, it doesn't really say that I can do that. So we hope that explains that a little more thoroughly. And then if you go to section 295-90-4, which on the original bill be line 27, says any person who directly or indirectly violates any provision of this section shall be guilty of a Class C misdemeanor. There was some discussion yesterday that this was not the greatest language in the world, and so the language now says any person who violates or directs another to violate any provision of this section should be guilty of a Class C misdemeanor. Now, the amendment that we were looking at, that still stays, so I'm giving my colleague a chance to redirect her amendment to the new substitute. And then the third change that was made was on 29.590-6, and it says in the original bill, the prosecuting attorney of each county and the attorney general of the state shall investigate complaints of violation. And we, there was some concern from some members that that sounds like every prosecutor and the attorney general. So what we did was we changed that language. It says the prosecuting attorney or circuit attorney with jurisdiction over the location where a violation or threatened violation of this section might occur, or the attorney general of the state shall investigate complaints of violation or threatened violation of this section. So that is the three changes with the new substitute. And I may have not have explained that very well, but I will try to go into it further if there are questions.
Just a reminder for the body, we are on Senate Substitute Number 2 for Senate Bill 19. Does any senator desire to be heard? Senator from the 14th, what purpose do you rise?
Mr. President, I would like to inquire of the senator from the 5th.
Senator from the 5th. The senator from the 5th is not in the chamber.
They're going to go retrieve her.
Pardon me? Would you like him summoned?
Yes. Okay. Thank you, Mr. President.
Sergeant Arns, please summons the senator from the 5th. Senator from the 5th, the senator from the 14th is requiring an inquiry of you. Do you yield?
President, thank you.
Senator, you know that you and I have known each other for a while. There's something that happened earlier that I wanted to just get in the air so people know the seriousness of the matter. Earlier, we were also privileged to go listen to the state of the judiciary. And as I was walking from the front of the House chamber into the back of the House lounge, one of the representatives in your district referred to me
as... Which one?
As,
who?
His name is Josh Peters. One of the representatives in your district first referred to me as Boo and then grabbed my arms and then did a forceful embrace, I guess, that was unwarranted and unwanted. I am very angered by this, first of all, being called boo, and I'm very angered that someone thought it would be okay to touch me. So, but there's something that you said when we were coming up the elevators earlier that he also said that I did not hear. Now, I know you can't use the word on the Senate floor, but I know that you would not want your child or any of the women in your family or in your district to be referred to this word.
Senator, I can just say I plead the fifth. No, I'll say this here. The comment he made was very disrespectful, to say the least. It was unfortunate that you had the encounter that you had with that representative. But at the end of the day, we have a lot of work to do, and I don't think that I should be on this floor talking about what happened to you during the State of the State. I have to get back to work.
Well, Senator, this is important because you have a bill. Today you just talked about, sex trafficking? Part of sex trafficking is oppressing a group of people to make a profit, disrespecting a group of people and their human rights. Anytime a state representative refers to a senator as boo or uses the other B word that rhymes with witch, that's a problem. Anytime a state representative grabs the arms of any person without the consent of that individual is harassment.
Hey, is this part of the filibuster on right to work?
It could be seen that, but I needed to get this out into the air because I do not like, so as well as others, do not like to be touched by someone they do not have a relationship with. It is your state representative in your district, and I know that you don't get to tell them what to do and not to do, but when it comes to touching, harassment in this building, I'm calling him out and giving you the respect and letting you know that I'm calling him out. He should not be referring to any senator, any intern, any employee in this building as boo or the B word that rhymes with witch. And by the way, he works for the unions too. He's representing unions, so it's actually on subject. He goes around St. Louis saying we want to get more African-Americans involved, but he refers to an African-American woman, myself, as boo and the word that rhymes with witch, and he represents the unions. That's a problem. And then on top of that, he touches someone, and I never asked for it. That's a problem.
Well, I'm sure you have all the reasons in the world to be upset about it. You aired your grievances throughout your email blast, and I'm sure that the media picked it up as well. I just want to know if this is a part of the filibuster. If not, then I'm going back to my office.
Well, it could be. It could be because there's a new substitute we have, and maybe I'm just giving room to the folks who are going to be standing up against the substitute.
Well, I'm not here to filibuster right now. I need to go back to my office.
Well, okay, I understand that you don't care, but Senator.
Oh, I do care. Okay. Make no mistake.
I just want to make sure because your sex trafficking bill is coming up, and I care about that.
No, most definitely.
I care about
it.
And I also care about the fact that there are people who have been in this building for years who have been victims of sexual harassment and who have been victims of people who are trying to have control over someone else. That's not right. So I'm calling out Representative Josh Peters. He could call his mother a boo, but do not call a senator boo.
Does any other senator wish to be heard? Senator from the 13th, what purpose do you rise?
Mr. President, may I inquire the senator from the 14th?
Senator from the 14th, do you yield?
Yes.
You may proceed.
Senator, thank you for bringing that to our attention. I wasn't back there. I trust that everything you said happened. But I also want you to know that, as in any organization, whether it be business or labor, we have people that do not speak for the whole. And I am one that, in my position, I'm very careful about what I say because I feel like I speak for the whole. So I am asking you, senator to senator, not to hold what happened to, against us, what happened to you, against us as labor leaders.
Well,
it's uncalled for. It's unnecessary. It's illegal. It's everything else that we write bills about in this chamber. Myself and the senator from the second have worked on several bills that address issues like this that that address trafficking and sex offenders and all the horrible things that nobody wants to talk about. So I am asking you, as a favor, and as the senator from the 14th, not to hold that issue against and paint all of us with such a broad
brush. Well, first of all, I was not doing that.
Well, I know.
The point that I was trying to make with the senator from the 5th is you care about that bill because today was the day she was dealing with the issue, which I care about the bill. In fact,
we all care
I think
about
we talked
bill.
About it. Yes.
I don't think
so
there's a senator in here that doesn't support.
I care about sexual harassment.
Yes. Oh, I agree. I care about sexual harassment as well.
In fact, when we were in the House lounge, you and I, we had an unspoken moment where we were looking into one another's eyes, and I know you knew that something was wrong. I know you knew that, because I didn't look normal as I usually do. And he had just done that. Anytime someone touches you, and you do not have a relationship with that person, you do not invite them to touch you, and they touch you and refer to you as boo or the word that rhymes with witch, that's a problem. And I'm going to raise it. I've been in this building for 17 years as an employee and as an elected official. And I'll be damned if I'm called boo.
And I don't expect you to be, Senator. I'm just asking you to... Please,
Senators, you will keep decorum in this chamber. I caution you to watch your language. You may proceed. Three senators standing. Senator from Butler, what purpose do you rise?
Mr. President, I got some special guests here I need to introduce.
Are you, Senator, you're in the middle of a debate?
I'm seeking unanimous consent.
Senator from Butler is requesting unanimous consent to introduce special guest. Hearing no objection, Senator from Butler, you may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. In the upper gallery, we got some fine students, some fine folks from Three Rivers College. They're here visiting today. It's a long drive from Poplar Bluff to here, and they're enjoying their visit very much. We have Ann Matthews, the Dean of Student Services at Three Rivers, Todd Allen, the director of the Achieve program, with a whole bunch of students from the Southeast Missouri District. And I'd like for everybody to welcome them here.
If the guests of the Senator Butler would rise and with the body, please make them welcome. Senator from the 14th. I'm sorry, Senator from the 13th.
Yeah. Thank you, Senator. Thank you, Senator. That was my only ask, and I do. I am sorry that happened, but please understand that that does not have anything to do with that young man's employment, the fact that where he works.
I called his superior, and he is at a funeral. He's supposed to be in the building today. I did what I could do to feel resolve at this point.
Okay.
But because I know so many people in this building, including myself, who have had their personal space violated, I had to stand up for this.
And
I'm not going to tolerate it. And I don't care who it is.
No, I'm not saying that you should, Senator, and I appreciate that, and I thank you for the inquiry.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. President.
Senator from the 13th, I'm sorry.
It's easy to get us confused. May I inquire of the Senator from Phelps?
Senator from Phelps, do you yield?
I do.
You may proceed.
Thank you. Yep.
Hi, Senator. How are you?
I'm good.
We're back on track. Sometimes we have things that take precedence over our work here.
Well, we needed to hear it.
Yeah. I wanted to talk to you a little bit about the new sub. It's
right.
05F, correct?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay, because I got like three sets of subs sitting here. I think I have two of each. And you know, yesterday I was greatly concerned about the section on the penalties. Where does this new language come from, and what does it do to the penalties section? Does it make it stronger? Does it make it watered down? What does it do to it?
Well, I think it more clearly defines, in other words, the changes that was made from the original bill was that any person who directly or indirectly, and that's somewhat vague, as some folks brought forth. So now it says any person who violates or directs another to violate any provision of this section shall be guilty of a Class C misdemeanor. So it, I think, clears up a little bit of what, in other words, who's actually responsible for doing the infringement or whatever that could be used against them, rather than directly or indirectly, was pretty vague and did not make a lot of sense. But it does not change anything in the penalty provision, and that's why I said I was going to give you time to draft your amendment
right
to this substitute, because we were having that discussion yesterday on your amendment for a pretty long period of time, and we didn't get to vote yesterday.
And where did the new language come from?
In that particular section or the bottom section?
All of it, any of it.
Yeah.
I'm going to the bottom section next, though.
Yes. This language is just, we thought and we felt, visiting with counsel and with the staff writers, that it clarifies a little bit more than just directly or indirectly. That's pretty vague. And doesn't, and here it's any person who violates or directs another to violate any provision of the law will be guilty of a Class C misdemeanor.
So on line 26,
yes,
where you've put in or circuit attorney, that's all you've done to change that, right?
Yes,
okay,
it is.
Okay, so and when you put in or circuit attorney, how does that change this?
Well, the way it read before.
What does it mean now that it didn't mean yesterday?
Yeah, the way it read before, it said the prosecuting attorney of each county and the attorney general shall investigate complaints, the violations, whatever. And it was felt that that was very vague or could be said. It's got to be every prosecutor and the attorney general to bring anything forward. There was just a discussion of clarification, and so we felt that the prosecuting attorney or circuit attorney within the jurisdiction over the location where the violation or threatened violation occurs, that should clear up kind of where we're trying to head with it.
Okay. Thank you, Senator. Mr. President?
Thank you.
Senator from the 13th.
Mr. President, can you summon the senator? May I inquire of the senator from the 1st?
The senator from the 1st is not in the chamber. Would the sergeant of arms summon the senator from the 1st?
Here, I mean, he is my attorney. There he is. Thank you, Mr. Dorman. Thank you, Mr. President. May I inquire of the senator of the 1st?
Senator from the 1st, the senator from the 13th is requesting an inquiry from you. Do you yield?
I do. Thank you, Mr. President.
You may proceed, Senator.
Hi, Senator.
Good afternoon, Senator. How are you?
Good. Do you know you have a new sub on your desk?
I do know that. I was listening. I was up in my office attending to some matters of constituent correspondence.
Senator, I am really sorry. I forgot you were still on the 4th floor. Well, you're in my
right.
own office, aren't you?
Well, you would know the way. You were there for 4 years, right?
So, you know, I was just talking to the sponsor, and I'm looking at the changes. I understand the first change on line 17.
Okay.
They added, I have to look at the original sub. But I think all that did there was add the word remain.
Okay.
To the language. Before it said become or refrain from becoming a member of a labor organization. Now it says become, remain, or refrain. But my question was down on page 2, line 26. And I don't understand any of this legal stuff. So that's your job right now. The way it changed was they added or circuit attorney after the words the prosecuting attorney.
Right.
Okay, what does that do? Does that make this tougher, harder, or does it make it innocuous? What does it do?
I think it's probably just an effort to be complete in that, in the case of the city of St. Louis, it is a city not within any county. We do not have a prosecuting attorney for the city of St. Louis. However, it is the 22nd Judicial Circuit. We do have a circuit attorney, and so you won't get charged and prosecuted by a county prosecutor if you get charged in the city of St. Louis. You will, however, get charged by a circuit attorney. I believe it's circuit 22. The county is 21. The city is 22, but if I have those reversed, I'll stand corrected. I think that's what that inclusion is made for. Probably sort of Missourifies this bill just a little bit, and I don't know.
As maybe what?
Missourifies. That's a new word in our state's lexicon. But to
Why
make the bill
Missourify?
Well, it makes the bill more Missouri-specific by acknowledging the fact that in not every jurisdiction do we actually have a county prosecuting attorney.
Yes.
And I don't know, maybe this bill was drafted in some sort of multi-state, by some sort of multi-state group. Maybe it was just drafted in research and they just now caught that this clarification could be helpful. But as far as substantive changes you could be making to the bill at this point, I would say that this one is probably not terribly consequential. I mean, it would be for a few hundred thousand people living in the city, I suppose. Potentially.
Right, so what you're saying is this probably, it could have started out as stock legislation base, basically?
It's been known to happen, Senator.
Run across the country and...
Well, yeah, you have some organizations that have some sort of template laws that they will write in different
right.
areas, and they'll sort of circulate them, and they'll go from state to state to state, and maybe in the case of Missouri, not realize that we have a circuit attorney for the city of St. Louis here in Missouri, and maybe somebody just caught it. I don't know. Sponsor could speak to how we got there.
And it's just, you know, it's a little bill. You know, you'd think there wouldn't be a lot of room for changes or errors for that matter, because it's only 3 pages, but I can see where, you know, you could tweak it. And I'm all for tweaking. If the senator from Phelps wants to tweak this bill every day for the next 4 months, I'm in.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm fine with that.
Sure.
But
I suspected you might be.
Yes. Yeah. Senator, I think that I am probably going to offer my amendment again that takes out the penalty phases from yesterday or the
sure.
civil penalties. And what was your feeling on that? Do you really think that there's no teeth in this bill? As an attorney, does it really, you know, do I gut the bill by doing that like I was told yesterday? I just want to protect those contractors that are good contractors that could be subject to frivolous lawsuits, and we're all about getting rid of them because we've been working on it when I came in here in 2003.
Sure. Well, I'll answer the question as follows. I supported your amendment.
Well,
I'll also note that, like any other law, no law is self-executing or self-enforcing, and enforcement provisions kind of come with the territory when you're passing a law and you want it to stick, but how you enforce it and what the statutory enforcement mechanisms ought to be is the subject of fair debate, and I support your amendment. I also understand where the senator from Phelps is coming from on that, but I now have confirmation, Senator, indeed it is City 22, County 21, proving that occasionally I do remember these things.
Nobody, you know, Senator, if you look over your left shoulder, you're going to see an old familiar face that can't come in. So if you see him, you might wave.
Can I look over my left shoulder? Does the new rule allow me to do that, Senator?
Yeah, you just can't take it away from that dais up there. You just look out that window.
Maybe if I occasionally wave to our new Lieutenant Governor, that will be sufficient to ensure compliance.
It was great to see him out here in the hallways today. It's been a while.
Absolutely.
Since I've seen him.
Well, I mean, any time. And look, we have a former President Pro Tem or two around that we will cross paths with some frequency in this building. But it's nice to see yet another former President Pro Tem back in the building, Senator.
You know, that's something that our generation of leaders will have, where former leaders that came before us, before term limits, that didn't happen very often.
Fair enough.
You
well,
know?
And there were only so many of them, right? I mean, with term limits, we just, I mean.
And they're good people, and I'm glad to see a lot of them in this building because they do good work, and I'm glad to have their input into a lot of the things we do here.
Well, there's a lot to be said for institutional memory, and I also think that, like any position in this body, I do think that pro tem is probably its own unique experience. And there's probably a point of view and a vantage that comes with the territory of that particular role that probably relatively few of us can understand, as with minority caucus leader.
It's a very small minority. That's what that word there is says it all, Senator.
Small but mighty, Senator.
Thank you, Senator.
Thank you.
Mr. President.
Senator from the 13th.
I have an amendment.
Please send your amendment forward. And has your amendment been distributed?
It has not. I ask for a waiver that it be distributed and ask for a waiver of the reading.
Senator asks for a waiver of the reading. Please send your amendment forward. Senator, you will not be able to close until it has been distributed.
Yes, Mr. President. Thank you.
Senator, would you like to explain your amendment while you're waiting for it to be distributed?
Yes, Mr. President. This is basically the same amendment I offered yesterday, and the good senator from Phelps allowed me time to redraft it. It was the amendment we left when we adjourned last night. This amendment was pending, and the senator from Phelps allowed me time to get this drafted to the current sub. And what it does, just to remind the body, is remove the civil penalties from this substitute.
Senator from Phelps, what purpose do you rise?
The Senator from 13th.
Senator from 13th, you yield? You may proceed.
Thank you. Now, is this pretty much the amendment you did yesterday to strike that one portion?
Yeah, it's exactly the same. I didn't change anything of the amendment from yesterday.
Right.
And I thank you for the courtesy of allowing me to get this drafted to fit this. There's no changes to it at all.
Right.
It doesn't do anything. In fact, I think I sent with the doorman both copies of the amendment up there.
Yeah.
But all it says is by striking said line, it's the exact...
Right.
Exact same amendment with different line numbers on it to fit your current sub.
Understood. I think they're coming with it now. So.
Looks like it's coming around.
Yeah, and so I will let you go ahead. I was going to help you with a little time.
You're going to help me get the Senate passed,
well,
Senator?
I told you I would make sure you got this.
Yeah, you did,
floor.
And I appreciate that, Curtis.
Now, of course, you know, at some point I may stand up and not be in favor. I know you're shocked, but...
I am just utterly floored.
Anyway, I thank you for the inquiry.
Thank you, Senator.
Senator from the 9th, what purpose do you rise?
Thank you. May I inquire of the Senator from the 13th, please?
Senator from the 13th, you yield.
I do.
You may proceed.
I think that was interesting, Senator. I think the Senator from Phelps just said he would support your amendment, right?
No, he said he would help me get it to the floor.
Oh, I must have
I haven't checked
I
lately,
what he
Senator.
Said was
but
I would help you get this done, is what I thought he said, but I'm not certain.
Well, he may have, but I can assure you that at 44 degrees, hell has not froze over yet. The Senator from Phelps and I remain very good friends, but on this issue, we do have strong difference of opinion.
Right, right. I get that. So I wanted to talk about your amendment a little bit. It says, of course, on here, striking said lines, but if you could kind of go through your amendment, too, that'd be good.
Okay, I can do that, but if you give me 1 second to find the sub from yesterday, because that's the one I have.
All I know is you disappointed me, Senator. I really thought that I had heard the Senator from Phelps say that he would help you get this done.
Well,
and I thought he said it because you guys were such good friends that he thought he'd help you get it over the finish line.
Well, I would really appreciate that, but that is not the case, Senator. So I am looking at... this amendment addressed, okay, section 2, which on the new sub is on page 2, and it's at the bottom. It's actually in the same place in the sub that it was in the other bill. The reason I was changing it, because I understand the misdemeanors and the reason to have fines for people who violate the laws that we pass in this chamber.
Right.
We have, and you came shortly to the House after me, I think 2 or 3 years after I did.
Right.
When Senator Wilson came to the Senate from the House.
Right.
And since 2003... we have been working to improve the climate for business owners throughout this state.
Right.
Or we've been attempting to. And some of the things we did then was tort reform, a few other issues, but the one thing that always rang true was we wanted to get rid of frivolous lawsuits.
Right.
And I kind of feel like this language here, starting on line 20 of your sub, that goes through... 25. It just encourages lawsuits.
Right.
And what often people, you know, say to me is, "Well, you work for the union." I do not work for a union. I happen to be a member of a labor union that I chose to join, that I vote in, that I elect my officers. So really, I look at my officers and my executive board as people who work for me.
Right.
Right. And I work for a contractor. Now, not often, but sometimes I might be on a job and I might have somebody that's not performing up to par, or they're starting trouble. I think an example was given on this floor yesterday. What if you're working on the job and you're working side by side next to somebody that's non-union, right?
Okay.
And that the union guy starts trouble with the other guys, will that open up somebody for a lawsuit? Well, if he loses his job over that action, I could see where he could go to an attorney and plead a case that he was fired because he belonged to a labor union. You know, and the fact that he was misrepresenting that union on the job site,
right,
falls to the wayside. And you know who's getting prosecuted then, or getting hauled into civil court, is the contractor he works for.
Right.
So, and that's what worries me. And maybe this language means everybody's going to court. I don't know. But I certainly don't like the idea that we would be putting these contractors in jeopardy. They are the employers. I mean, if you knew You know, I was shocked. I did some research just on maybe 8 or 9 projects in the St. Louis region over the last 3 years from 2 different entities that happened to, they're a holding company for a lot of labor unions. $1 billion, Senator.
Oh, wow.
$1 billion. That's in St. Louis. And then I started looking at the projects, okay?
Wow.
One of them was just south of Forest Park. And I believe, do you see how I said I want everybody to know Forest Park?
Yes.
Did you see that? That O was there. But I believe that was in the senator from the 4th District. It's right next to Forest Park Community College, south of Forest Park. One of them was near where our governor came from, the Central West End. One of them is a high-rise in Clayton that's supposed to be finished in June or July, I believe. And that's just 3 of them. But it's over 1,000 residential rooms. And when I say residential rooms, these are luxury apartments and condos.
Oh, wow.
You know, and I have been to the one on Forest Park at Oakland there, just south of the park. I've been there a couple of times to speak at groundbreakings. I was there to speak at a safety meeting one time to the folks working the job there, the trades working there. And I believe that both of those are to capacity. And that's why you got another, it's all, are they millennials? I don't get the lingo.
Right.
I don't know who falls into what age group
right.
and what title they get. But
I
it's mostly young urbanites that live in, right. want to live in the city, and they work and they play down there. And,
okay.
you know, it's pretty cool.
So
it's pretty cool.
Was,
and you know what, the money was all generated by folks who work in labor unions. It's our pension dollars at work.
Right. And you said it was $1 billion.
I'm sorry?
You said it was $1 billion?
It was. I stopped counting this morning when I got the figures at $700 million. So it's closer to $1 billion than it is to
right.
$650 million.
Okay, I get it. I get it. But I do share the same concern with you. Of course, I support your amendment. We've had a lot of discussion the last couple of years about trying to deter folks from filing frivolous lawsuits. And then it shows up, of course, in the substitute. So I get it. You know, I understand it. You know, another question I have, and I don't know if this is a question for the senator from the first or someone else, is Class C misdemeanor. So I guess I'm also curious as to what also falls under a Class C misdemeanor, if that's what folks are going to be charged with if they violate.
You are right, Senator. That question would have to be for the senator from the first or the senator from the second, I think, could answer that question for you.
Okay.
They are both attorneys, and that sounds like it's a pretty easy question for them to answer, but I'm not an attorney.
Right. Well, I do support your amendment, and I certainly thank you for the inquiry. Mr. President?
Senator from the ninth.
May I please inquire of the senator from Phelps?
Senator from Phelps, do you yield?
I do.
You may proceed.
Senator?
Yes.
I know, I thought I heard you say. I know I thought I heard you say that you would help her get this amendment over the finish line.
I was helping my colleague get her her amendment distributed because I had pulled back the substitute that she had her amendment on. But I did tell her I would probably at some point stand up and talk against her amendment. But
oh, I thought you said speak
was trying to be fair.
I thought that would be too good to be true, but I thought I'd try it anyway.
You thought
I certainly thought that's what I heard.
You thought I'd saw the light, didn't you?
I know you're a nice guy and all, but I said, did I hear him correctly? I think he said he'd help her get it done. I do have a few questions for you. And
yes.
I was out in the hall with someone who, of course, is coming up for confirmation next week. So I didn't hear. I was wondering about the substitute, but I thought I heard you say that if there is a violation, it shall be investigated by the prosecuting attorney and the attorney general. Did I hear you say that?
It if you look on the substitute, page 2, line 26, that was the third change that we made. And it was very ambiguous in the original bill. It said the prosecuting attorney of each county and the attorney general shall investigate it. And what this clarifies is the prosecuting attorney or circuit attorney with jurisdiction over the location where the violation or threatened violation of this section occurs, or the attorney general of the state of Missouri. So what we're trying
oh,
to do.
So it does say or. So,
yes.
So you're not mandating
and before
that the prosecutor and the attorney general investigate all complaints.
And before it sounded like you had to have all 14 counties and the prosecutor, and
okay.
And then did it actually apply to St. Louis County because they're a city within a county? Some people say yes, it does, because we have statutes that says that it does. But at the end of the day, this seems to make it much clearer, and at least that's what we were trying to do.
Okay, and, so it does say or.
You're right.
Either the prosecutor or the circuit attorney or the attorney general, but not both.
Right.
Okay. Okay. Right. And then I guess.
And it could have been interpreted as meaning everybody the way it was.
Yes.
And,
that's
and allowed
the understanding
part of it
that
out.
I had earlier.
Yeah.
Okay. So also, I think, did you say that one of the changes that you had made on this was to, where was it? Become, remain, or refrain from becoming a member of a labor organization on the
first
page?
Yeah, and it, before it just said become or refrain from becoming a member, and we said, well, someone may want to remain a member, and so we added remain, become, remain, or refrain from being a member.
Well, there was
we didn't very clearly spell out that, you know, it doesn't mean you got to get out. So this says you can stay as a member if you want to.
So, okay. So I did have a concern about one other area. And specifically, clearly, you know, this is saying that folks cannot mandate or require folks to become or remain.
Right.
Or refrain from becoming a member of a labor organization. So, but on the back here, so even if it were not required and there were recruitment efforts done by the labor organization at these employers, I'm a little concerned in that, you know, on the second page it says any agreement, understanding, or practice written or oral, implied, or expressed. And I kind of feel as if we're talking about recruitment efforts, obviously it would not be required. If this should pass, which obviously in all likelihood it will, but I'm a little concerned that we have implied in there, because in any recruitment efforts, if someone deems it to be implied, it means it was not specifically expressed that they had to, but the person for some reason felt that they had to.
Well,
and
I
think that could mean a bunch of different things, even if it were not expressed or implied by the person who may have been given the implication.
Yeah,
that
yeah,
it may
but
have
if,
been received by the person in another way, that person would then be potentially liable for a Class C misdemeanor.
Yeah. Any agreement, understanding, or practice written or oral, implied or expressed between any labor union, labor organization, and employer that violates the rights of the employees as guaranteed under this section is unlawful. And it makes it null and void and no legal effect. In other words, what we're attempting to do there is to protect the rights of the employee as guaranteed by this section of law. And I didn't explain that very well, did I? But what we're, in other words, you understand what we're saying, that you can't.
Well, I understand that it's not of legal effect, but if the legal, if it's, I understand that the agreement is not of legal effect, but the person that is deemed to have implied, okay, so here's an example. I'm a recruiter for a labor organization, and we work at an auto plant.
Right.
And I have tables set up outside. The workers are coming in, and I'm talking to them about the benefits of joining the organization.
Right.
And the person who then comes by the table, who may be a new employee, and something that I say, even though it was not specifically expressed, that it was required, I don't know. I just think when we talk about implied, I think that that could mean probably a number of things, where even in a misunderstanding,
I don't think there's anything in this bill that's going to prevent them from recruiting labor unions because, as you know, some of the statistics that we were talking about yesterday was in Oklahoma, Kansas, Texas, when they became a right-to-work state, their membership in the unions actually went up pretty dramatically because there was a lot going on, and even though you could opt out, the union did not have to negotiate on your behalf. We kind of went over that yesterday, and so therefore the labor unions seemed to be much more responsive. They were having meetings, they were having discussions, and a lot of the people didn't want to be left out of those options. Therefore, membership actually went up in those states, and it continues to go up.
So my question is, we're
not preventing anyone from joining the union. We're just saying that you can't be forced or to join a labor organization just as a part of your employment,
right,
even in a closed shop.
Well, let me ask you this, though. But do you think it's fair that some folks pay and everyone receives the benefits, too, though?
I did not hear you. Someone had the door open.
I said, so do you think, though, that it's fair that some folks pay and others don't, but everybody receives the benefit of the folks who are paying?
Well, we talked about that yesterday, you know, and I tend to believe that the federal law has stated that unions do not have to collectively bargain for someone that's not a member. You're kind of out there on your own to make that to do that collective bargaining for your situation, and I think that does make a lot of people think twice about it. If they feel the union is doing them a good job and being helpful, I think they're going to continue paying those union dues, certainly that's their right within the bill.
Right. So do you think that the employer, though, is likely, if I have 50 employees, I won't use 50, I'll use 100 employees.
I didn't hear you again. I'm sorry.
I said, so do you think, let me hold a little closer. So do you think if I had, say, 100 employees, and maybe 50 of them decided to belong to the union and the other 50 did not,
yes,
that if I decided to give a raise, I likely would only give it to the 50, of course, that belong to the union? Probably the likelihood is that I would feel as if I would have to give it to all of my employees, which then, of course, would not be fair for the folks that have had to pay, obviously, for the union representation.
Yeah.
But I am a bit troubled by this, and I'm going to say that. It's like me paying utilities, okay? Me pay utilities for some additional benefit that everyone gets.
Right.
And the folks, of course, that don't have to pay still receive the same benefit as I do. No, I don't think that's a process that would be fair. And I don't think that that is a process that I think in other situations would likely probably hold true. I mean, I just, I think we're going down the wrong path here. I think we are, of course, singling labor unions out. You know what my position is on it. I'm going to go back to, I would hope that some of the members, of course, would support the amendment of the senator from the 13th. As much discussion as we have had in this chamber about trying to deter folks from frivolous lawsuits,
right,
I would hope that this would then be something that folks could, of course, support. With that, thank you.
Thank you, and I understand your concern, as I said yesterday, and we probably agree to disagree on some of these points, and I understand that. Thank you for the inquiry.
Thank you. Mr. President.
Senator from the 9th.
Thank you. May I inquire of the senator from the 1st, please?
Senator from the first, do you yield?
I do.
Senator, you may proceed.
Thank you. So, Senator, I had a question earlier about the
sure.
Class C misdemeanors.
Okay.
And I guess I was just curious as to, I guess, how deep the violation or what exactly this means, if there would be penalties for someone who could be prosecuted and found guilty of a Class C misdemeanor. What are other Class C misdemeanors? I'm trying to figure out how serious of an offense this is and,
sure.
you know, others that might be, of course,
well,
in that class.
I heard your question earlier, and of course, the first thing to bear in mind is that all of this changed at the start of the month because we have a new criminal code in
right.
Missouri that took effect. So the answer prior to a few weeks ago was, of the three types of misdemeanor, a Class C was the lowest of the three classes of misdemeanor, above an infraction. But obviously below a Class B or Class A. We have now added a Class D misdemeanor as well with
okay.
the change in the code. So the misdemeanor that would apply to this this particular enforcement provision is no longer the lowest level of misdemeanor.
Oh, I didn't realize that.
But, and I will say, Senator, I'm having a little bit of trouble hearing you.
Okay.
The and it's not because of you, Senator.
Okay.
I'm just, yeah, gently suggesting
Mr. President. Mr. President.
Senator from the ninth.
I think the senator from the first is having a hard time hearing me. I was hoping that maybe in the chamber we could lower some of the noise.
Would you keep the noise down in the chamber so the senators can debate? You may proceed.
Thanks.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Thank you.
Range of punishment for a Class C misdemeanor is now between $300 and $750. Previously, the maximum length of incarceration was 15 days. I don't believe that has changed, but I could stand corrected on that, Senator.
Okay.
In terms of examples of other, I'm sorry.
So this just changed this month.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Okay.
And an example of a Class C misdemeanor, at least under the prior criminal code, would have been the excessive blood alcohol first offense, different from driving while intoxicated first offense, but
okay.
excessive blood alcohol would be one example.
Okay. Thank you.
I hope that is helpful to you in your query regarding the enforcement provisions we are debating on the floor
it
presently.
It is. Thank you. Mr. President?
Absolutely.
Mr. President?
Senator from the ninth.
Thank you. May I quickly inquire of the senator from Phelps again?
Senator from Phelps, do you yield?
I do.
You may proceed, Senator.
Thank you. Okay. So, Senator, you heard the inquiry. And I guess I'm wondering, since the new criminal code did go in effect in January, if we were really probably attempting to make this the lowest class misdemeanor when the bill was written. I mean, in as much as he said now that, you know, before January, of course, Class C was the lowest level misdemeanor, and now we have a Class D,
right.
This would not be the lowest. So I guess I was wondering what the original intention was. And if it happened to be that this Class C would, of course, be the lowest class, and now there is a D, if that would be something that we would be willing to consider, or, you know, I'm not sure what the original intent was when we put C in the bill.
We did talk about that and the changes that were occurring, and we decided to stay with the Class C misdemeanor. As things move along, if we get compelling evidence that this is too stringent, we revisit or we relook. I don't look for there to be a lot of lawsuits in this area, quite frankly. There hasn't been in other states with very similar penalty provision. So I would say that most prosecutors or most circuit attorneys, it would have to be a pretty bad violation before they'd get involved. And you know, if it's a really bad violation, then it probably becomes a criminal defense issue rather than a civil or misdemeanor offense.
You mean the violation relative to mandating that they become a part of the union?
Right. Violation, you know, if I mean, I think it's going to be very hard to prove these violations and to bring these penalty phases forward. There may be times or examples where it's been extreme, and some of those it may be then a toss-up. Is it an actual civil settlement misdemeanor, or is it a criminal offense, you know, if someone's actually gotten hurt or whatever? And I don't look for that to happen very often either, maybe never.
Right. So the Class D is not anything we're willing to consider at this point, because really we're not trying to put people in jail. You're just trying to get folks to stop requiring folks to be in unions, right?
Right, and trying to get their attention that, hey, this is the law and you got to kind of abide by it. And so I would say there would be a very unlikelihood of a judge putting someone in jail over one of these issues unless it was a pretty serious violation, much more than a Class C misdemeanor.
Right. Okay. So, but you're not willing to consider going down to a Class D, since the original intent probably was not, or probably was, for it to be the lowest class for misdemeanor? Am I saying that correctly? I'm not an attorney.
I would like to stay at C at present time.
Okay.
You make your point is not discounted. It has been considered, and this is where we thought it was a proper classification, and we may be wrong.
Okay. Thank you for the answer.
Thank you.
Further discussion on the amendment. Any senator wish to be heard? Senator from the 4th.
Inquire the senator from the 13th.
Senator from the 13th, you yield?
I do.
You may proceed.
Good afternoon, Senator.
Good afternoon, Senator.
So if I understand correctly, this is the same amendment that you had last yesterday.
You do understand evening. Correctly. Okay. It is the same amendment.
Well, I'm a freshman, so I'm slow. So you'll have to walk me through this again. I apologize. And I was listening to the debate from the senator from the 9th and the senator from the Phelps, and perhaps I, you know, don't really understand the misdemeanor classifications as well. And I don't know what the emphasis was to go with a Class C misdemeanor and as opposed to a Class D. But, you know, I think that we touched on it briefly yesterday, but these penalty provisions seem rather extreme for a business owner that's just trying to run their business to be saddled with something like this. I hear constantly in the other chamber, this chamber, about how we don't want to have these burdensome regulations on businesses, but here we're trying to interfere with a business's right to operate in the way in which they want.
Yeah, we all have a difference of opinion. To me, it's government overreach. We've worked a long time to ask government to stay out of our business in both of these chambers. We're talking about fining and taking private businesses to court because they choose to exclusively hire union members. I don't know. I just don't understand how we can pick and choose when that's a good idea, but we are.
Sure.
And I don't know how many contractors that you're affiliated with. I'm sure a lot more than I am, because just by virtue of the size of the IBEW compared to my local.
Yeah, it's quite a few, and you know, in the hearing on the bill, we've heard from several of them that their contractor associations, not from the unions, but from the contractor associations and from some contractors in general, that that this was an issue for them, and that you know, some contractors didn't, while they didn't like the legislation in general, I think that it was expressed that the penalty provisions are particularly a sticking point for them.
Yeah, I don't know. You know, I sat in on part of the hearing, and as you know, you're on that committee. I am no longer on that committee. And there's some good folks that come and testify specifically from your trade organizations, but your contractors. I've been very impressed with one of them. She's come up for years, and every time I talk to her, I become more knowledgeable on the subject, believe it or not. I mean, you can all, if you quit learning, then you quit, you know, you're going to be stagnant. And every time that Emily comes up here, I learn something new about our business and about our industry. And I'm grateful for that, and I'm grateful for the education and the perspective she brings to this building as a contractor.
And you're speaking of the owner of Ashinger Electric, is that
yeah,
correct?
Yeah, I believe Emily Martin. And, you know, I didn't realize until I started coming up here that it was a woman-owned business. And I think that's pretty cool because I had a little cousin that was one of the first lady electricians that worked for them many, many, many moons ago. But I thought that was pretty neat. She never finished. She never stuck with the trade, but she did work with Ashinger. It was the only contractor she worked with.
Yeah, I have several friends that work for that company, and I believe the owner is a city resident as well. I'm not sure if she's from the.
The owner is what?
I believe she's a city resident as well. In
yeah,
St.
how
Louis,
big a shop is it?
I'm not sure if she's in the senator from the 4th, or I'm sorry, from the 4th district or the senator from the 5th. I'm not 100% sure. But I don't know exactly. I think there's somewhere over 100.
Aren't you the senator from the 4th?
Yes, Senator. Thank you.
That's not a rule, Senator. You can say my district.
I did correct myself. Thank you. Trying to learn how to walk these fine lines here, Senator.
You're doing a great job,
I'm
Senator.
Sure you're,
Those
I'm,
are all the new senators in here.
You know, you touched on something earlier that I thought we might elaborate a little more on. And, you know, you and I are both come from the construction trades. And you talked earlier about the money that's been invested just in the last year or so with union pension funds just in St. Louis City. And I know there's probably some people listening and from Kansas City that would help fill us in on the projects going on. But the point is
there is a huge project going on in Kansas City, Senator. It's Cerner. It's a 10-year, 10-phase project, and they've just completed the third phase of it. You know, and up there you have that. You have Clay Como. You have the car plant. You know, it was mentioned in here yesterday that we lose car plants. Well, they didn't lose the one there. There's 7,500 employees in that plant working. They start out at $15 an hour and they top out at $28 an hour in benefits. That's pretty good job.
Good middle class living, absolutely.
And that's a lot of trucks rolling through that plant. I mean, we've invested $600 million in that project, and I think we're getting our money's worth out of it.
Just thinking about the outside businesses that feed the production line there it's a huge multiplier for jobs.
Well, you could say that too. With the you know, I don't know if you in your career has ever had a chance to work at Boeing or to work at any of the people that are companies that are contracted to them. A lot of things that are put into an airplane aren't necessarily made by the airplane manufacturer, and they're not necessarily just made by contractors that are right there near the site. When I was, it's been 30 years ago, I went to, I believe, Mary's, Missouri. I'm not sure, and I don't know who represents that part of the state.
What town was that again?
Mary's. It's either Mary's or St. Mary, Missouri, but they had a plant there, a little plant that manufactured airplane seats. And they were a contractor of Boeing's. They made airplane seats for the planes that Boeing were building at the time. I worked at one place, and maybe I might be confused. They might have made car seats for the GM plant out in Wentzville. But I've worked somewhere that made airplane seats. I've worked someplace that made car seats. There was a place, I just called them widgets. I didn't know what they were. They were a bunch of little plastic pieces that went into the manufacturing of airplanes. And I'm like, I couldn't believe the industries that are developed around the manufacturing industry that are not owned in whole or part by the person building the object. Does that make sense, what I just said, Senator?
It does. It does.
Okay. Okay.
And
I got there.
I guess, you know, before we go back to something, I just want to point something out. I think that the General Motors facility in Wentzville has three shifts, I believe, right now, and they're constantly expanding. And the Ford Clay Como plant has, how many employees do you say they have now?
7,500.
And that's, it's my understanding that's the largest Ford plant in the world. Is that correct?
I don't know, but that's a lot of employees. I thought that, you know, I don't know what they had out at GM, but that was huge. That is like a city unto itself if you ever worked inside there.
Never worked in a car plant, if you can believe
it. Oh, you
that.
Didn't?
Never
Pretty
have.
Interesting stuff, and they are busy all the time. I know at least in recent times and earlier in my career when things were booming, they were always busy. If they wanted to shut down a line or they needed to have an outage, as we call them, it would be like on the weekends or even over holidays that we'd have to come in and work because they didn't want to shut those lines down and slow up production.
Right.
And I get that. It goes back to the old adage, time is money, Senator. And when you're not producing, you're not getting paid. And you know what, Senator? When you go out on a job site, how long are you going to last if you don't produce as an electrician? How long is it going to be before you're not getting paid?
About 5 minutes.
Yeah. Well,
not a lot of slack out there.
You know,
there.
When I went through my apprenticeship program, they really, I had a good work ethic anyway. I had a father that worked all day and all night to take care of his family after he lost his job. You know, and we followed his example. But if you didn't have a good work ethic going into that apprenticeship program, you were going to have it coming out, or you weren't coming out of that program. And that wasn't going to be your career path.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't think that there's anything wrong with that, because when you train these people to do these jobs, you want to produce a good project, just like that car that's getting produced or that truck that's getting produced up at Clay Como. You want a good product.
Yes.
You want people to keep coming back to you. And that's what happens with us. We deliver a good product, so now we're going to penalize contractors that wish to continue that relationship with us. And, Senator, that's just not fair.
You know, Senator, you touched on the training that's offered. You know, I know you're very well aware of this, but, you know, the trades spend about $40 million a year at no cost to the taxpayers on apprenticeship and training, creating that skilled workforce. And I think you kind of hit the nail on the head there with, pun intended for our carpenter friends, that...
what did you say?
Never mind. We provide a service to provide that skilled workforce, and it just seems like an unfair attack. And, you know, we talked about, talking about just those two car plants, and we could talk about other things. We could talk about the investment in Boeing and several different things. But all of those investments, all of those new jobs, the Clay Como plant was on the verge of closing, and I know GM was down to one shift, and they weren't doing very well. But those car plants chose to invest in Missouri, which was not a right-to-work state.
And you know what? Missouri chose to invest in them.
That's right. That's right.
We have to remember that. And you know what? When you go back to the training part, I've got a son-in-law that's a millwright. That man can build anything, and he learned his craft over on Hampton Avenue. And he's good at it. He's really good at it. If I didn't know the kid, I'd hire him to build my house. The skill is, it's incomparable to what some of the other folks bring to the table. And that's why people keep coming back. We don't have to advertise it. We don't have to send out memos or buy billboards, which we do, though, saying how great we are. Our contractors know. That's why they keep coming back to us. It's a good relationship we have. We work hand in hand. You know, back in, I don't know if it was the late 60s or if it was in the 70s, whenever Pride was started, and Pride for this body's information, was an organization of union leaders and contractors that wanted to see things move forward in the state of Missouri for the good of the construction industry. And now it goes by another name. I forget what that name is. But they keep coming back to us because there's a good working relationship there, and they know what they're getting. And the bottom line is, if I go to buy a loaf of bread of a certain brand, I know what I'm getting. And that's what these contractors like, Senator.
Well, it's a partnership, I believe. Wouldn't you say so? It's a partnership.
Oh, absolutely, it's a partnership.
Between the, especially with Pride, it's a partnership between the employees, the labor unions, the consumer, the organizations that actually use the products that we provide in building and construction, and certainly the construction industry. And that organization was formed as a result of some issues that were happening back then that were slowing down the industry, and they came together and they said, you know, let's work together here and provide a vehicle that will help bring about some changes in the industry, and they've been incredibly successful. And I think that speaks to us kind of policing ourselves. We know that if we don't provide a good product, if our members are not skilled and trained and able to do the job that's in front of them, and our contractors have to be able to produce the right amount of people and the talent necessary to do that so that we can provide a product for the construction consumer industry throughout the state.
Let's talk about that a little bit, Senator, about policing ourselves.
Sure.
I've been around a little bit longer than you. I'm not sure how old you are, but I know that you're not near my age. You have a long way to go in your trade.
Senator, you look very young.
Well, thank you. But
I assume we're close in age.
You know, I remember when we started policing ourselves, and I can remember on the union hall floors when guys were saying, I'm not putting up with being drug tested, and their leadership was saying, oh, yes, you are, because we want a safe workplace. We want everybody to go home the same way they came to work that day.
That's
and
right.
If you got a problem with that, you don't need to go on that job site. If you can't pass a drug test and you can't work safely next to your partner, you know, that did wonders for the industry. Just something little like that. It did great things for the industry. It improved their safety record. You know what else they did? And I was the first one to say, nobody's telling me what to wear to work.
What's that?
The orange and the green shirts.
You know, Senator,
there's a lobbyist in this building today that he has on safety green socks. And I asked him if he was going to be working out on 54 later tonight that they could probably use him with those socks. But I'll tell you what, do you know what that has done to the insurance premiums for these contractors?
Right.
Unbelievable.
Sure.
My daughter got in The Apprentice. They said, go out to Walgreens. They sell orange shirts. You're going to need them.
Yeah,
and they provided them at first. That you always got a shirt with either your local logo on it or the contractor or both.
Well, but, Senator, let me step back for that. I went through the early times of that, and you know, one of the complaints that I had was that they did provide us with a shirt when we got to the job, and usually I got one for 5 days a week. So you know, that was an issue. And you talk about you know, sometimes construction workers complain a little bit about something, whether it's real or imagined. But I thought, well, I was one of those that said, I don't want to have to buy five new bright orange shirts and five bright yellow shirts for different jobs that require different colors. But you know what? Our leadership took it amongst themselves to say, listen, this is for safety. This is something that's going to help the entire industry. And as you said, I think it's been successful. And I think it's that partnership that helps us out. And we don't, just like this body, Senator, we don't always get along. We don't always agree on wages and job site classifications and things of that nature in our contracts. But by and large, when our contractors do well, we do well. But it's that partnership that provides a benefit to the state and provides a benefit to the consumer.
I agree with you. And I don't see anything wrong with having a partnership like that with these contractors. As long as you're all good actors and you're up above board with everybody and each other, it makes it work.
And I guess that's the you know, there's, we don't need to go into the merits of this of all the stuff in this legislation. I think we all know where we're headed with this, and it's a shame. It is what it is, but I think it's something that's not necessary, and we're not all going to agree with that, and I understand that.
Thank you.
And it's a shame that that we're in this position right now. You know that, and I know that. But earlier, let me go back to something else. Earlier, we were talking about some of these the job sites and that were expanding. You touched on Cerner and some of those other. I was actually talking about just the job sites that are being made possible with some of our union pension investments. Those are the ones I was thinking of. Investments from ULICO and things like that. I know there's some sizable projects going on in the Central West End in St. Louis, actually all over the city. I've worked on several of those projects, Park Pacific Building downtown. I worked on the Continental Building in downtown St. Louis. Jobs that just wouldn't happen without investment by union pension funds. And I know that, I find it a little upsetting that we're all fine and good with when we're creating jobs, but no.
Distracted, and the folks up front have been kind enough to turn my mic off for a minute. I had a tickle in my throat. And I didn't hear what you were saying. But I'm sure you'd be glad to repeat it after the senator from the 4th gets finished whispering in your ear.
One more time, Senator, I apologize.
No, I didn't hear you because I was coughing. I think the senator from the 4th had a message for you. I don't know.
Excuse me, Senator. Mr. President.
Senator from the 4th.
If I could have 5 members standing, I'd request a roll call on this amendment.
You have 5 members standing. You will have a roll call vote.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Are you finished?
Just as a reminder to the body, we are on Amendment Number 1 from the Senator from the 13th. Senator, so I'm clear earlier, you did move for the adoption of that amendment. Is that correct? All right. Thank you.
I'm a little confused. I believe, does the senator from the 4th have the floor?
He just yielded the floor.
Oh, he did yield. Okay.
He just yielded the floor.
Thank you.
Does any other senator wish to be heard?
I do.
Senator from Phelps, what purpose do you rise?
Speak on the amendment. And, Mr. President, I encourage my colleagues in the Senate to vote no on this amendment. I think it does damage to the bill that we have worked a long time on and tried to craft that was fair. So I'll not say any more than ask my members to vote no.
Does any other senator desire to be heard? Senator from the 11th, what purpose do you rise?
I'd like to inquire of the lady from the 13th. Did it.
The senator from the 13th.
Or from senator from 13th. I'm glad to get it over with.
Senator from 13th, you yield.
Mr. President, may I inquire of you?
You may.
Mr. President, is there a reason that you have chosen to be so lenient with these new senators that fail to honor our rules? So I'm looking over there, and I'm waving up there, and I'm doing this. And then just now, Senator, I understand you're new to the job, too.
Senator, I think you make a good point.
Uh-oh.
Senator from the 11th, there is no ladies in this chamber.
I apologize.
Thank you, Mr.
Senator,
President.
The 13th, we are back to inquire. Do you yield for an inquiry?
I absolutely do.
Thank
Senator,
you very much.
Senator, you may proceed.
Thank you, sir. Thank you very much, Senator. I actually was having a couple meetings in my office just now, and I'm coming back to the floor, and I'm trying to figure out exactly what your language was on the bill, if we had moved on, or are we still on the same one when I...
We are on the same amendment as yesterday, but it's redrafted to fit today's sub, and it strikes the civil penalty language that was in the bill. It's in the bill.
I see. So we had to go back and redraft that since the new
sub
came out. Yes,
the senator from Phelps was generous enough to give me time to do that. Sometimes I look over there and I think he might be rethinking his decision, but it is what it is.
Well, Senator, I just, I would tell you, I've sat through this in committee this year here, and obviously being a former House member, I have sat through this fight time and time again in the House. And I keep thinking to myself, the thing that strikes me is when people start talking about senators, House members, whoever, they start talking about worker freedom. This is about worker freedom, because I think we all know obviously what it's about. It's about lower wages, about working families, and I just find it hard to believe when we're saying this is about worker freedom that at some imaginary or regular place at some national convention somewhere that millionaires and billionaires are sitting around and they're going, how do we spend our millions of dollars getting people elected for worker freedom? You know, our workers just don't make enough money. We should go out there and we should make sure that we get people elected that are going to push this worker freedom, because gosh darn it, we make too much money. We make too much money. We need to put more money into their pocket, because if it's not going into their pocket, Senator, it's going into the workers' pocket. And at the end of the day, this bill puts more money into their pocket and takes it directly out of workers' pockets. Am I wrong about that, Senator? I mean, do you feel like I'm wrong? Because I'm sure there are certain people that would think that I'm wrong on that. I don't think that that's the case. I think it comes directly out of working families' pockets, and it goes into the top 1%. And you can go down the argument of exchange of wealth and from the poor to so on and so forth. But I just, when you look at dollars and cents, I was told in politics years ago, when it's not about the money, it's about the money. That's kind of how I was raised. And when you look at the dollars and cents in this issue, and you start looking at the issues of transfer of wealth, wages going down after this bill or whatnot gets enacted, you can argue one way or the other. I would disagree with you. I'd have to respectfully disagree with you. That when you look at money and you look where it comes from and you look at people that get elected and so on and so forth, that there is an end game here. And if it's not to, and if it's to compete with China, if it's to compete with the wages in Mexico, if we're moving in that direction, we're never going to get there.
No, we're not.
We're never going to get there. And at the end of the day, you either bring everybody up globally in some regards and have some human rights in the world, and you give pay people wages that they can sustain a living on, instead of trying to push people down further and further and make life harder and harder for them. And I just keep thinking about this meeting of these millionaires at these retreats where they write this legislation, thinking, gosh, how do we make their lives better? I get it. Let's take the money out of our pocket that we're making with our income, with our businesses, and let's pay our workers more. And the only way we can do that is by busting unions. The only way we can get more money into these workers' pockets is by taking out the labor union. I just find that hard to believe. I find it hard to believe that the thing that's in the way of putting more money in the workers' pockets is that pesky labor union and the negotiator. It's shocking to me. But they're, you know what, out of the kindness of their heart, they're going to probably get their worker freedom. So all their meetings in Palm Springs and, you know, these warm weather climates, or their, you know, all the meetings that these millionaires and billionaires have had to draft legislation and go around this country and pass it, and the tea box conversations that they've had. Well, they're finally going to get what they want in Missouri, more than likely. And I would try, personally, Senator, I take a different approach. Because, quite honestly, I think you know very well, there's a lot of people out there that voted for President Trump.
There is.
In labor unions. There's a lot of people out there that voted Republican up and down the ticket.
And they actually met with him yesterday. I don't know if you've seen the YouTube video.
I did. I saw a short snippet.
John McGarvey, the carpenters were there. I think the sheet metal guys were there. Mycroft was there.
Yeah.
And you know what? She's a woman.
Yeah, good
gal from that. I think she might have been the only one at the table.
Sure.
But I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would take a different approach, and I'd probably go out of my way to protect workers. Maybe this is some people in some minds and some thoughts around this country that's what they think they're doing.
You know what I'd do if I was a contractor, Senator?
What's that?
I'd make sure that I paid a living wage, I had good benefits.
Yeah.
But then I'd make sure that those people I employed, they had good training, that they adhered to my safety policies that my company sets forth. I'm big on safety. I don't know if you noticed or not.
Yeah, sure.
But I've worked in a lot of places and seen a lot of things. You know, you fall 4 foot off a 6 foot ladder, that could kill you.
Yeah.
You know, and we laugh at that, but it actually could. And I don't have a problem with working safe. Working safe to me is working smart. That's what I do. That's what would make my product better, and that's what would make my bottom line better as a contractor.
Sure.
I just don't think that, you know, and we all yell about the boss and we yell about the contractors, but you know what? I have a perfect opportunity as the first woman in my trade and as a woman at that time to open up my own shop.
Yeah.
And you know why it didn't happen? I didn't want to put that many hours into a work day. Those folks work hard.
Sure.
You know, they're in there early, they're out on the job sites, they're checking on their crews, and then they're going back and they're reading bids and they're drawing up bids the rest of the day. I mean, they work as hard as we do in longer hours. And when it's yours, you have to.
Yeah.
And I didn't want that responsibility. I wanted to be around to raise my girls.
I get
that. You know, I wanted to be at home.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I just, Senator, I feel like there is after this election cycle, for whatever reason, there's kind of a cataclysmic shift that's going on in America right now. And this argument of where these dues might go into, you know, campaigns or whatnot, or one way or the other, whether they can or can't or do or don't or whatnot, I would argue, first of all, in the state of Missouri, if they're going to certain parties, we're not doing very well, number one. Number two, I would also argue that there is a huge shift going on in this country right now, and if it were me, I'd take heed and maybe take advantage of that. But I understand that some of those conversations that happen at country clubs, in like I said, in Palm Springs with people who go across state to state to pass this legislation, are so concerned with making sure that workers have freedom, and they are dying to get this bill done. That's why they've helped out so heavily within all these different states, not to increase their profits or so on and so forth. They're just out there fighting for the worker, and as we've seen time and time again, and they're, like I said, Senator, I understand it. People voted. I wish they could have had another opportunity to vote on it again. And we're in this situation for a variety of reasons, in my opinion. I'm not going to go down that road. But
the people voted, but it was in 1978.
I agree. No.
And in August of 1978, when the polling came out, they said we were going to lose 2-1. Guess what happened?
Oh, yeah.
60% of the people of the state said no.
Sure.
No. And they weren't just members of the labor union. Our numbers were up then, but It was a lot of people. It was a lot. It was doctors and lawyers and nurses and school teachers that said, no, we can't change this law. We need to protect the workers. We need to keep it at a living wage, because when you have a union involved, even the non-union sector benefits from that. Or
absolutely.
At least their workers do.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. I mean, so it'd be interesting to see if this ever did. I'm sure there's polls going on now, and everybody's scrambling to do stuff, and God bless them, and I hope everybody's successful. But I really believe that the polls I've been seeing says the same thing as it did in 1978. That was a long time ago.
Absolutely. And, I will say, like one of my good friends had said in committee, I hope to be wrong, Senator. I hope that we're all wrong. I hope that there's 10,000 more carpenters next year, or the year after, or so on and so forth. I hope the carpenters grow leaps and bounds next year. And I hope that we have more people on construction jobs than we've ever had. If we're wrong and that happens, that happens. We're not going to be, Senator. I don't think we're going to be. I'd be shocked if we were.
Yeah.
But at the end of the day, we know what's going on here. Everybody knows what's going on here. And we had an election where... I think we're going to have an election where people will be able to weigh in on this at some point, and I hope they decide the same way they did back in 1970
in the good old days, in the dark ages.
In the good old days, in the dark ages, that I've heard plenty about.
And, I don't even want to know what year you were born, Senator.
Oh,
I'm afraid I would just...
I think I am on the cusp of being a millennial. I'm not sure. I think the cusp is like 80 or 79. Or if it's 80, I'm a millennial.
All right.
So.
That's on the top end? Is that where they cut off?
That's where it cuts off, yeah.
Okay,
I think 79, you are no longer
a
millennial.
Is that Generation X after that?
I think so, yeah. Generation X. And that's my brother's generation.
2000?
That would be the senator from the fourth generation.
Ah.
Yeah.
So is he older or younger than you?
He's older. Oh, gosh. Don't do that.
Oh, I see. So 1980 was the beginning of it up till now. Those
yes.
are the millennials.
79, you would be a Generation Xer, I believe.
I see.
Before. And 80 and forward, I think, is millennial.
I guess we didn't have a label then.
No.
We're
no. So, well, Senator, thank you very much for the inquiry. It's something that's kind of bugged me a little bit, sitting through committees and listening to things on the floor in regards to this is all about worker freedom. And I just know those millionaires and billionaires are dying right now after this bill passes to go out there and give every laborer, every carpenter out there a big pay raise because they're finally going to be relinquished from these pesky labor unions. They're all going to walk in tomorrow and, or the day after, I guess, August 28th, it'll go into effect. And,
yeah, one of the trends of some of the texts and emails I received today, one guy really summed it up, and I thought, yeah, you're right. Amen, brother. He said, I would gladly give up 1 hour pay, which is what he said his dues were a month, to be represented how I am, and I'm happy to do it.
Sure. Yeah.
For what I get, the return he gets on his dollar for that.
Yeah.
So... that's it in a nutshell.
Yeah. Well, again, thank you very much for the inquiry. And I think it's kind of sad, but at the end of the day, it is what it is. And I guess the moral story is wait and see.
Thank you, Senator.
So, thank you. Thank you, Ms.
Does any other senator desire to be heard? Senator from the 1st.
Prior of the senator from the 11th.
Senator from the 11th, do you yield?
Yes, Mr. President.
Senator, you may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. Senator, I was listening to your inquiry there with great interest. And to this point in these proceedings, I've only been inquired of. This is actually the first time I've sought recognition in this debate. Right now, we're on the enforcement amendment. I'm wondering if we have a third senator who is about to get on their feet. I'm not sure if we do or not. Maybe if we could figure that out. I don't want to. I'm not sure what the priorities are. In any event, Senator, so the first thing I'll note, I think this is the first time that you and I have inquired of one another on the Senate floor, so welcome
to
the Senate.
Yes.
I note that you...
I remember going back to our House days when I believe I sat directly in front of you in the House.
That's right.
Yeah.
So I'll also note... oddly enough, you were the senator from the 11th. I'm the senator from the 1st.
Yep.
And last year, as a senator from the 1st, I was at the desk that you're standing at.
That's right.
And the erstwhile senator from the 11th was actually at this desk.
Oh. Very nice. So I can see my future.
There you go. well, you know, Senator, that depends. You might want to watch what you... anyway.
Yeah.
So I note as you're standing here, having been at that desk for the last 2 years, that you're... It looks like your microphone, there's like a metal part to it there that's sort of dangling down. I don't know whose fault that is, Senator. I'm not sure how it got that way. I'm sure it was just like that when you found it.
Yeah. I'm sure there's a team working around the clock to figure it out.
Yeah. All I will say is if you've got your microphone attached to your lapel, you might want to be careful how fast you stand up, lest you possibly break your microphone.
I've been told I'm a senator now. I don't have to move fast anymore. So
there you go. Fair enough.
I plan on doing so anyways.
You know, so anyway, I want to get to the policy, and I know we're on the enforcement amendment, and there's going to be plenty of room to discuss the underlying merits of the bill later, and that's fine. I've been asked about enforcement. I've probably said about as much as I have to say about this pending amendment, but you were talking about the underlying merits of the bill, and so I wanted to seize this opportunity to do the same myself.
Sure.
Yeah, and I will freely admit that I'm not going to have a footnote that I can drop for every number that I'm about to cite. All of it comes from somewhere. Just don't ask me who published the study. I just know that these are numbers that I have seen and heard in various quarters about the effect that passing right to work can have on one state. The first is that I've heard, on average, wage earners earn 15% less in right to work states than they do in closed shop states. Have you heard a similar suggestion?
Sure.
And that's not just for the unionized workforce. It's not that union workers make 15% less in right-to-work states. It's that if you get paid by the hour, whether you're in a union or not, whether you're in a unionized line of work, on average, workers in right-to-work states make 15% less. And I think back to 1996, a little bit more than 20 years ago, and there was an incumbent president running for re-election that year. And the party that was not the incumbent party had a very simple platform. They had these T-shirts with 15% on them. And the campaign pledge was that vote for us, you'll get a 15% tax cut. As Bill Maher put it, hey, I'm paying you money to vote for me. But the point of it is we've gone from the notion of a 15% tax cut leaving more money in people's pockets to a 15% pay cut is what we're talking about with this legislation right now. I don't know why when there's new management around, the first order of business in an effort supposedly to create jobs would be to, over time, rein in wages for working Missourians who, in my opinion, are already stretched plenty as it is.
I agree.
But that seems to be the priority. Is that what it seems to be to you?
Senator, in my opinion, it's a binary choice. More money goes into their pockets. The more money that comes out of their pockets goes into profits, goes into the upper management, goes into, you know, CEOs, so on and so forth. It's binary choices. I've heard a million times over this campaign season, I kept hearing binary choice. But it goes somewhere. There's no magic wand in between there that's going to magically give everybody increases outside of, obviously, there, you know, you have more production and so on and so forth. But I don't tend to think that the top of the chain is going to automatically just share that without good negotiation, and labor union provides that. But go for, so on.
There is no magic asterisk in the parlance of the 40th administration. No, I agree with that. You know, my philosophy on it has always been, and going back to the 42nd president and his farewell address at the convention in Los Angeles in 2000, said, look, the rising tide lifts all boats. The yeah, folks right. at the top who own the shares, who benefit from profitability growth, all right, are never going to do better than when working families in the middle class are prospering. When you put money in or keep money in the pockets of working families, what are they going to do? They're going to put it right back into the economy. They're going to buy goods. They're going to buy services. They're going to use that money.
Sure.
And that the better they do, the better everybody does, including the people at the top that get the dividend checks.
I agree. Senator, I would just ask, how was that 42nd president's economy?
Were you really?
When he left office. Was it pretty good? I think it was pretty good, right?
Yeah. Well, you know,
it was a surplus, as a matter of fact, right? Only surplus I think we've had in, man, I'd have to go back.
Since 1964 or thereabouts. Yeah. And again, I'm not...
I'd hate to take economic advice from somebody that, you know... Yeah. Actually did it and did it pretty well.
Well, in fairness, it was President Johnson's administration in which the government began deficit spending. I wasn't around then. I'm not a millennial, but I wasn't around for that. I would have had to have been, I guess, maybe a late boomer, maybe a Gen Xer, 64. You seem to be versed in these cutoffs, Senator.
The only reason I know, honestly, Senator, is because this summer, and as I watched, as you did, I'm sure, being the political beasts and junkies that we are, I watched so much about the millennial vote. You know, the millennial vote is so important, the millennial vote over and over. So I guess one night I was watching TV and they actually showed, here's when you're a millennial, here's when you're not. I would have much rather them told me how they were going to grow the economy for millennials.
Sure.
or help a millennial maybe with student debt.
Well, and I'll say...
Versus the cutoff.
You know, if you look at trend lines in terms of where millennials tended to line up this last time around, I will just say that for you and I are on a side of the aisle that, frankly, probably at least this particular go-around did not do enough to communicate a vision for a competitive, prosperous future for our youngest generation, many of whom hit the workforce in the most challenging economy that just about any generation has been confronted with since the greatest generation coming out of the Great Depression and into World War II.
Well, and I don't mean to interrupt, Senator, but sure. I would also add that this – you have a lot of millennials nowadays that are not going to college because of the debt that they have to take on.
Right.
And guess where they're going? They're going into technical jobs.
Yeah.
They're going into labor unions. They're going to have and make a good wage for their families. They're going to have a good life because of the life that the labor unions afford them. And we're putting a roadblock, in my opinion, up immediately when this gets passed or signed, whatnot. And so we might talk in jest of millennial or non-millennial or anything. That age group, whatever it might be, that is looking at, you know, maybe 50, 60, 20, 30, 40, whatever, depending on if they go to graduate school or not, of this tens of thousands of dollars worth of debt, or starting to work immediately, there's a lot of them are taking the option of going to work. And
yeah.
And I think we have a responsibility to make sure that if they're going to join the workforce at that age, we have some sort of technical training for them. We have some sort of ability for them to make a good wage, grow a family, and a tax base for us.
And it's going to get harder when and if this bill is law, in my view.
I agree. Couldn't agree more.
It's going to undermine collective bargaining strength. It's going to undermine the strength and integrity of wages in our state. But going back to, you know a good economy when you see one, and I'm going to try not to do this every day, but it's another flag-the-tape moment. You know, I noted on Friday I was speaking to a Chamber of Commerce group in my district, and of course Friday was inauguration day, and I said, you know, folks, just remember, today, the Dow's at better part of 20,000.
Yep.
Unemployment is at 4.7%. Inflation is at 1.2%. Growth is at 2.9%. And the federal budget deficit, even though it's higher than I would have it be, I would prefer to get back to 2000, where we were on pace to pay off the national debt by 2008. You know, we wound up only missing it by about $15 trillion. But the federal budget deficit today is $500 million, which is a third of what it was 8 years ago. And, boy, I sure hope that as we go forward in time, that all of those indicators will get better, that the deficit will go down, inflation will stay under control, we'll stay at close to full employment, and the markets will continue to flourish, and we'll have strong growth. I sure hope that that's what we see, but in case we don't, I just hope everybody remembers where we are today, because it's a long way from where we were 8 years ago. I mean, if folks want to pursue the policies that brought us to where those indicators all were in January of 2009, more power to you. But I think that most Americans and most Missourians are far better off today than they were in 2009.
No, I couldn't agree more. I mean, being on basically the brink of another Great Depression after, you know, 8 years of policies that were just economically insolvent, in my opinion, and tax cut after tax cut after tax cut that did nothing but was basically a steroid to break the lull, and then you go right back into the lull, and then the just basically complete collapse in 2008. And I sit here at this last cycle, and I hear people talk about those are the good old days.
Right.
I mean, those are the good old days when people were being tossed out of their homes. When they were being
by the millions being
foreclosed on, you could buy properties in urban areas for $500 because they had so much foreclosures. And you know, my advice to a lot of people would be to buckle up, because I think it's unfortunate. I hope that I've never wanted to be more wrong in my life, because if the past is any indicator of the future, it's going to be bumpy. It's going to be real bumpy, and it's going to get bad, and it's going to get bad really, really fast. And I hope I'm wrong, and I hope that I'm standing here, like I said, in 3-4 years. And
eating crow. You'd love to be.
Love to be.
Well, that said, I'm afraid this bill is going to make it that much worse for a lot of middle-class working families. Couple of other statistics, and we're in Missouri, so every time I mention statistics, I, of course, have to reference Mark Twain and his, pantheon of ways to mislead people. That being said, for each of these, there's a source out there in the ether somewhere, but the information that has crossed my desk indicates average worker wages in right-to-work states, $6,109 lower than in states that have stronger labor policies, such as Missouri does today. Health benefits, 13% lower in right-to-work states. Poverty rate in right-to-work states, 15.3% higher, which, by the way, almost perfectly correlates with the 15% take-home pay number. And as distressing as all those indicators are, perhaps most distressing, risk of death in the workplace, 49% higher in right-to-work states.
Sure.
And I am sure that there are counter statistics that members of the body may want to bring, and that's fine. We can have that debate. Mark Twain, I'm sure, would say the truth lies somewhere in between. But
Senator, you talk about the statistics, and I agree with what you're saying. And that's the most trying thing that I think I've taken away from this cycle is, you know, the statement of alternate facts. Last Sunday morning, and now we're getting into situations all across this country, and scarily, and it's very scary at the presidential level of just making up our own numbers now. I'm trying to think here. I heard a saying the other day. It used to be that you found ideas to support your facts. Now you're finding facts to support your ideas.
Fair enough. Yes.
And your statistics are great. I can shout one at you. You know, one of the best economies in Europe, all of Europe, is Germany. You know, in Germany, somebody from their labor union sits on the board of directors in Germany, and they have one of the strongest countries for unions and so on and so forth. But,
well, Senator, if you want to craft that amendment, I suppose we have time. I understand there's a senator who has an introduction to make, so I'm going to yield the floor for a moment so you can do it.
Does any other senator desire to be heard? Senator from Green, what purpose do you rise?
Thank you, Mr. President. I seek unanimous consent to introduce a very special guest.
Hearing no objection, you may proceed.
Thank you, Mr. President. I apologize to the body for interrupting the riveting debate. My circuit clerk from Green County, Tom Barr, is here on your right, my left. He's up here. He was here for State of the Judiciary, and the clerks are here talking about what they do in each of our districts for the people that we all serve together. and I would just like to welcome him officially and have the introduction printed in the journal and ask that he be made welcome here in the Senate chamber.
Would the body please welcome the guest of the Senator from Greene. Does any other senator desire to be heard? Does any senator desire to be heard? Senator from the 13th, you are recognized to close on Amendment 1 for Senate Substitute Number 2 for Senate Bill 19.
Thank you, Mr. President. I close.
The senator from the 13th renews her motion that the Senate Amendment Number 1 be adopted. And there is a roll call vote to that. Has been requested. Madam Secretary, call the roll.
Senators Brown,
no.
Chappelle Nadal, Cunningham,
no.
Curls,
aye.
Dixon,
no.
Igel, Emery, Hageman,
no.
Holzman, Hoskins,
no.
Hummel,
aye.
Kehoe,
no.
Koenig,
no.
Kraus, Leibler,
no.
Munslinger,
no.
Nasheed,
aye.
Onder,
no.
Richard,
no.
Riddle,
no.
Rizzo,
aye.
Romine,
aye.
Rowden,
no.
Sater,
no.
Schoff,
no.
Schatz,
no.
Shoup,
yes.
Sifton,
aye.
Sylvie,
aye.
Wallingford, Walsh,
yes.
Wasson,
no.
Whelan,
aye.
Senator from the 7th was first up. Senator from the 31st.
No.
Senator from Lewis. Madam Secretary, would you please call it? Okay. Senator from the 8th, purpose to your right. Senator from the 8th, what was your vote?
Vote no.
Senator from the 14th.
Aye.
Senator from the 14th votes aye. Please call the absentees. By your vote of 12 ayes, 21 noes, the amendment has been defeated. Senator from Phelps.
Thank you, Mr. President. If there's no other discussion, I close.
Senator from Phelps, let me go back and say that we are now back on Senate Substitute 2 for Senate Bill 19. Does any senator wish to be heard? Senator from the 24th.
Thank you, Mr. President. To inquire of the Senator from the 1st.
Senator from the 1st, do you yield? You may proceed.
I'm going to see how much I can, maybe this way, turn around and talk to you and still have my shoulder pointed directly at the dais. So I wanted to talk to you about another portion. You know, I think it's a little bit disappointing that that last amendment that we talked about for so long failed.
Well, Senator, at least it wasn't 24 to 9 or 25 to 9. It could have been.
Right. So it had bipartisan support for that amendment.
Yeah.
It just didn't pass.
True.
But, missed it by... know, it seems to me that we certainly gave broad ability people to sue for all kinds of reasons, and right?
And I'm having it actually, it'll be easier for me to hear, Senator, actually, if you do and that way you'll be talking into your microphone a little bit better.
All right, yeah, I'm going to move
great.
My microphone.
Thanks.
Okay, thank you. That was a great solution.
Doing our best.
I wanted to talk to you actually about another area of the bill, and
sure.
It is Section 6 on page 2 at the bottom.
Yes.
In that, it gives prosecutorial authority to the Attorney General.
Yeah,
and,
sure does.
Right, and you're an attorney, and I want to talk to you about whether that sort of standard operating procedure to give the Attorney General that jurisdiction, that primary jurisdiction, as it does in this piece of legislation.
Yep.
It is standard operating procedure.
Oh, is it standard operating procedure?
Right.
No, the bill does that, but no, it is not at all standard operating procedure.
And why do you think that it might have been put into this bill?
Well, I mean, I think it's simply in an effort to empower the Attorney General to enforce the provisions of this bill alongside local law enforcement. But it is highly unusual for the Attorney General to have that authority. Another bill that we're going to be talking about this year on the floor, I suspect, the Missouri Merchandising Practices Act, is one such bill that gives the Attorney General original jurisdiction to enforce consumer protections. But other than that, it's pretty much rare as hen's teeth for the Office of Attorney General to have original jurisdiction. With the criminal prosecution functions that the Attorney General's office does discharge, that jurisdiction is by and large, if not exclusively, and may well be exclusively secondary.
Right.
You'll
so
have special prosecutions handled by the office in cases where there's a conflict with the local prosecutor who does have original jurisdiction. You'll have jurisdiction where the local prosecutor might call for the cavalry to come over the hill from the special prosecutors in the AG's office in Jefferson City. You usually see that in cases that are more egregious than perhaps what some offices are used to handling. Not always, but there's a number of attorneys in that office, or at least there have been in prior administrations, can't speak to this one just yet, that are seasoned prosecutors, most typically from urban and suburban jurisdictions, who will handle the occasional death penalty case that might be the first death penalty case a particular county has seen in a long, long time, and the local prosecutor might not be as comfortable handling such a case as, say, somebody who has tried a couple dozen of them in St. Charles County.
Happens in that case. So if a municipality doesn't feel capable of handling a certain case, how does that generally work?
There's a procedure, and I do not recall if it's statutory or if it's less formal than that. I haven't. It's been some time since I've looked at that. But it's done. I mean, it's done. A lot of the special prosecutions that are handled by the Attorney General's office come in that way. Others are by conflict of interest, and they're just
right.
Where the local prosecutor feels the need to recuse, either as a matter of discretion, or if it's mandatory. For instance, if you're the county prosecutor and a member of your immediate family is charged, well, you're probably not the right person to be bringing the case.
Right. So are we rewriting this, trying to outline what the new Attorney General's job should include? We're giving that office more responsibility, or?
Yeah, this would be adding an additional responsibility or power to the Office of Attorney General, and it has been my experience, and the RICO statute that the former senator from Boone brought a couple of years back was a case in point. Generally speaking, our county prosecutors are very jealous of their original jurisdiction.
Right.
They do not, it is in the American system, it is the local county prosecutor checked by the voters who has original jurisdiction over pretty much all charging functions. The MMPA is probably the most noted exception to that in Missouri. This would be creating another exception. And to illustrate how seriously the prosecuting attorneys take that in Missouri, when that RICO bill passed, and it's interesting, we talk about former pro tems in the building these days, he and I walked a fine line for a few days as that bill was perfected but never brought to a third read vote, and there's a story behind that that I won't bother you with, but long story short, it got perfected, and there was a lot of consternation about it, even though, unlike this bill, which pertains to collective bargaining,
right,
that bill was about as close to the subject of the law enforcement function of the Office of Attorney General as it could get. It was racketeering, influencing corrupt organizations.
Right.
I mean, the federal analog, the federal RICO statute is the primary tool used by federal prosecutors to prosecute organized crime. It's also used to prosecute other forms of racketeering. And the effort was simply to bring that same RICO law into Missouri. And I think, and I can't speak for the prosecutors on it, but my sense was, no problem giving them RICO jurisdiction in Missouri. But the notion that the Office of Attorney General would have original jurisdiction was enough, I think, to cost that bill not only the prosecutor's support, but their active opposition, very active opposition, after the bill was perfected, that particular vignette, I think, shows how central to the mission of our local county prosecutors their original jurisdiction in substantially all matters, MMPA excepted, and there may be another exception that I'm glossing over at the moment, but this would create a new exception, and that's a really big deal. That's rare.
Right. It is a really big deal, and I don't want to put words into your mouth, certainly,
sure.
And I don't want to overcharacterize what this does, but in a way, it's a slap in the face to the local jurisdiction, because doesn't it put the Attorney General's office, the state office, on equal footing in having that first pass? Again, it's on page 2,
yeah,
section,
I mean,
6 at the bottom.
And to be fair, I would characterize the language in this bill as granting concurrent jurisdiction.
So then how do you think the determination is made about who has jurisdiction in this case?
Well, that's a great question, Senator, because section 6 gives it to both. I mean,
right.
It says
it gives it to both, and then I don't know where that fight or dialogue or compromise occurs. So I guess maybe
a
question I'll need to ask of the sponsor of the legislation.
Yeah, I mean, you've got concurrent jurisdiction here, and I can't swear that there isn't another area of the law where we have concurrent jurisdiction. It could be that the MMPA provides for it. But as I stand here, I cannot think of one off the top of my head. There may be one. If so, there's probably an established body of law for how you deal with that. But I suppose, without such guidance in the case law, you could have a situation where the Attorney General wants to prosecute, and the local prosecutor says, "I've got jurisdiction here. Charge dismissed. I don't think we have enough to charge, or I don't think I can prove this case beyond a reasonable doubt." Or I suppose you have cases where both want to charge, neither want to charge, one and not the other. I would just say that of the there are several reasons I supported the amendment to alter the enforcement provisions in this bill, and I think I just gave you one of those reasons.
Right. All right. Well, I appreciate the inquiry. I'm going to probably come back to you if you don't mind in a bit, but I would like to, Mr. President.
Senator from the 24th, for what reason?
Thank you, Mr. President. To inquire of the Senator from Phelps.
Senator from Phelps, does he yield? He is on his way to his desk.
I do.
Okay.
Hey, Senator, it sounds like you're losing your voice, so I won't make you talk for a whole lot of time. But I wanted to ask you a question about page 2 of your bill at the bottom, section 6, where you give the Attorney General of the state equal prosecutorial authority with the local prosecuting attorney or circuit attorney.
Right.
What's the rationale for that?
Well, and you realize that there is some clarifying language in the Senate substitute version Before it said the prosecuting attorney of the counties and the attorney general. And so what we tried to do was clarify that it doesn't take all of them, but that the prosecutor does have, I mean, the attorney general does have the option for taking up these cases, you know, if it's a severe enough violation, you know. And probably they would not be involved in a Class C misdemeanor case. It would probably be more something that was criminal.
So if the based on what you're telling me, even though I don't see this in the language,
right,
the attorney general would have sort of his first option to take on this case?
I think that he can, if, you know, if there were a lot of complaints in a jurisdiction that weren't being addressed, he would have the option of going in and taking that on.
Well, it is my understanding and belief that our local prosecutors, our municipal prosecutors, our circuit attorneys,
right,
their job in their communities is to deal with these complaints against the law. And I have a real concern about putting the attorney general as the first spot where we could make a stop for these cases. So you're just saying you put it in there, you think that it would apply in certain kinds of cases or in under prosecution of cases?
Right. I wouldn't expect them. I think they're busy enough with other things that this is going to be a high priority.
Which makes me wonder why we would even want to have it in there and not leave the attorney general to the appellate jurisdiction as the attorney general has in so many other of our cases that should be handled at the municipal level.
Yeah, it gives the option, if they're not being handled, then it is already in law that it can be handled otherwise.
Well, I'm not sure I'm going to go back to one of the two attorneys in the chamber,
right. But
I believe that that option would exist if things weren't being handled well or carefully, that there would be an opportunity for the attorney general to step in. But this takes allows the attorney general to have discretion over all of these kinds of cases, and that gives me pause. I don't know why we would want to put the attorney general in that position, and I don't know why we would want to take the ability of the prosecuting attorney or circuit attorney, their ability away to adjudicate these cases.
This is a language, very similar language that was borrowed from some of the latter bills that's been passed, right work bills in states recently, and we did a little more clarification.
All right. Well, we're Missouri, the Show Me State. So I think that we usually like to come up with our own versions of these bills, even though there are groups, including ALEC, who try to put bills like this out around the state. So I'm going to actually send forward an amendment that I'd like to discuss and see if we can talk about the idea that the Attorney General goes back to having his place at the appellate judicial court, as he does now in so many other issues.
Right.
Thank you for the inquiry.
Thank
Mr.
You.
President. Whoa.
Senator from the 24th.
It's someone new. Mr. President, I have an amendment.
Would you please send your amendment forward, and has it been distributed?
Mr. President, it has not been distributed. I move for a waiver of the reading, and I will not close until it has been distributed.
Hearing no objection, the reading will be waived, but you will not be allowed to close until it has been distributed.
Thank you, Mr. President. Mr. President, may I go back and inquire of the senator from the first, please?
Would you like to explain your amendment?
Oh, certainly. Thank you for that opportunity. So what this amendment does is it strikes the words in the bottom of page 2 and the top of page 3, or the Attorney General of this state. It takes out the attorney general's being called out for having primary jurisdiction in these cases.
Okay. And, Senator, you are moving for the adoption.
Thank you. I move for the adoption.
All right. Senator?
Now I remember how to do all of this. Thank you. I'll be better next time. Mr. President, may I inquire of the senator from the first once again?
Senator from the first, do you yield?
I do, Mr. President.
You may proceed.
So, Senator, I don't know if you were able to hear the discussion that I had with the senator from Phelps, the sponsor of the bill.
I did.
And can you tell me if a district or community or municipality, county government, county prosecutor, circuit attorney is not prosecuting cases and the attorney general believes they should be prosecuted, what is the procedure for that? Do you know?
Senator, I don't know that there necessarily is one in all cases, or even in many cases.
Okay,
I mean, when I talk about county prosecutors having original jurisdiction, they're the ones with the discretion, by and large. When you talk about special prosecutions, the Office of Attorney General essentially gets involved only in the event of a recusal, disqualification, or request of the local prosecutor, MMPA being a different matter. And I'd have to, again, check to see if MMPA is concurrent jurisdiction, if a county prosecutor can bring an MMPA prosecution, which I suspect that they can. I know that the Office of Attorney General has original jurisdiction in those cases. Beyond that, as I stand here, I met with a constituent on Friday who was extremely upset. Her son was killed in an accident between, I believe it was a commercial truck and a motorcycle. And not a commercial truck, I'm sorry. It was a larger vehicle, but it was a non-commercial, personally owned vehicle. And
the son was on the motorcycle?
I believe so. And the driver had a condition such that he had certain restrictions on his license. And the concern was that the mother who lost her son, her belief was that the individual behind the wheel of that vehicle had been driving in violation of the restrictions on his license, which is against the law in Missouri. There are penalty provisions for the Department of Revenue to discipline the license. There's also the possibility of criminal penalties in those circumstances. But under the circumstances of that particular case, the county prosecutor and the exercise of his discretion elected not to prosecute. And the point of all this is, agree with it or disagree with it, under Missouri law and under the American system, that call is the local prosecuting attorney's call to make and nobody else's. There are some states, and we had this with a high-profile case in the St. Louis region a couple years ago. There are some states that have a bypass procedure where a petition circulated by citizens can result in an information being brought or a grand jury being convened. Missouri is not one of those states, as far as I am aware. I don't believe so. Looked at it at the time. Connecticut, I think, is one such state. The state of facts that I just outlined to you, Senator, is one such that, if the Attorney General decided that they wanted to charge the person with something, unless that something was an MMPA violation, Senator, no way to do that.
Right. So that sounds like a terrible situation, and I'm certainly, if I was the mom of that son, I would feel like it was important to follow through and see that through. So I understand that concern about what a local prosecutor did or did not do. So while I get that, what we have in place in the state of Missouri is, in general, almost across the board, laws that say the local jurisdiction prevails. This is a local control issue that the prosecutors closest to the people in the community make those decisions about which cases to pursue or not pursue. Is that right?
Yes.
And that in the case of this jurisdiction over collective bargaining, to me, it's a different category. I mean, certainly important to people who feel like they've been wronged or perhaps businesses who feel like they've been wronged, but I'm not sure it rises to the level of saying from the get-go we should be able to supersede the ability of the local jurisdiction from doing its work and replace it with the Attorney General's ability to come in and take over any of these cases.
Senator, I think you've hit the nail on the head, and here's the crux of your amendment and why I support it. In saying that in this one instance, we are going to grant the Missouri Office of Attorney General original or concurrent jurisdiction over the enforcement of this one law, we are elevating this law above substantially every other law in the state that a local prosecuting attorney has the authority to enforce. If somebody commits murder, we are saying, in effect, well, we're not going to give the Missouri Office of Attorney General original jurisdiction in that, but they ought to have it here, not in murder, but here in collective bargaining enforcement. If somebody commits mass murder, same answer. We are saying that we want the Office of Attorney General not to be involved. If somebody walks into a daycare with an automatic weapon and kills 50 kids, all right, we don't want the Attorney General to have original jurisdiction over that, but boy, for collective bargaining enforcement, that's something that rises to the level of giving the Attorney General original jurisdiction. And let me tell you why I think that might be, Senator.
Okay.
Let me tell you why I think that might be. I think that there is concern that some local prosecutors, in their discretion, may elect to worry more about murder than they do about collective bargaining. And I think the concern is that of all the particularly, I mean, you and I represent the same county, Senator.
Right.
It's a county of 1 million people.
Right.
We got a lot of things going on in our county.
Right.
We've got a lot of crime going on in our county.
Right.
And out of all, I mean, it is just a fact. It is a truism. All right? Not every crime, not every type of crime, as a practical reality, gets 110% of all the resources potentially available to be put on it, all right? That's just reality. These offices don't have unlimited resources. They just don't. They have to make the same difficult decisions on a day-in, day-out basis. It is really a tremendous burden. It is a tremendous, and it's a tremendous responsibility. And I think part of the reason you might see such an unusual break from how we do things in Missouri in terms of who has the original jurisdiction to charge is out of concern that in the grand scheme of things, our local prosecutors might be a little bit more worried about murder, rape, robbery, burglary, DWI, than they are about this particular law if it gets on the books.
So this is a case of the Missouri legislature, should this bill pass the way it is, the Missouri legislature overstepping its bounds and saying, we are going to say in this case, forget all the other cases that you described, the DWIs, the murder cases, killing children, hurting our children. Regardless of all those cases, we're going to say collective bargaining rises to the level of providing primary jurisdiction to the Attorney General over all those other kinds of cases.
Yeah, 2 years after we said that racketeering doesn't make that cut, that
right.
Organized crime doesn't make that cut.
Right. So I think we are in agreement that this is a pretty simple change to this legislation that says let's not prioritize prosecution of collective bargaining over other violent crimes that may be going on in our cities and counties and municipalities throughout the state.
I agree with what you just said. I would maybe use a different word than prioritize. We are granting the Office of Attorney General jurisdiction here that it doesn't have in other matters.
Right.
Along
to
the
me,
lines,
to me, we're recounted. Creating a priority in this. Right. And so I understand that you would characterize it differently, but I think it's really a misuse and a mischaracterization of what our local why we have local control in Missouri in so many of these other kinds of cases, that is the place where it starts, and the Attorney General is there for appeals.
And to the point that you raise, and I think the senator from Phelps acknowledged it, we were talking about C felony and the range of punishment and all that. I mean, the reality is, C misdemeanor. We have a prioritization of different classes of felonies and misdemeanors because, generally speaking, some crimes are regarded as more serious. They have a longer range of punishment or more severe range of punishment. A Class A felony ought to get more focus, generally, than a Class C misdemeanor. You want to enforce all of the above, but again, whether it's a matter of state enforcement or federal enforcement, there is just not 100% uniform enforcement of the law in any one county, state, or nationally. We all wish that there could be or would be, but again, unfortunately, our prosecutorial offices, whether at the state level or the federal level, simply do not have unlimited resources. They have to try to do the most good that they can and do the most that they possibly can to protect the public with the limited resources that they have.
And that's true whether they are the local prosecutors or in the Attorney General's office here. Everybody
sure.
has limited resources, so everybody has to make the best use of their time and their money and make sure that the cases that we prosecute are the most severe and really the most important to the public to be prosecuted and to the victims of those crimes.
Or in the United States Attorney's office, yes.
Right. Okay. Anything else that you want to add to this discussion about this amendment before I close our inquiry?
I think we've covered it pretty well. I mean, I think your amendment is tightly drafted. You've hit on an issue that is a really big deal to our state's prosecuting attorneys. And I don't know if they have weighed in on this. I mean, we're the 34 of us here are senators, right? I mean, if we think, whether it's prosecutors, labor union members, or business owners, if we disagree with them on behalf of our constituents, we each have the independent responsibility to exercise our judgment on behalf of our district in the state of Missouri. That being said, I'm kind of funny on issues of law enforcement. I'm pretty keenly interested in what offices of prosecuting attorneys and the men and women serving in the police force have to say about things.
Right. I agree. I appreciate you bringing that up because I think it's really important. We're going to have to go home and tell those people in our communities what we did and why we did it.
That's right.
Right. Thank you, Senator, for the inquiry. Thank you, Mr. President.
Does any other senator wish to be heard on amendment number 2? Senator from the 4th, what purpose do you rise?
To inquire the senator from the 24th.
Senator from the 24th, do you yield?
I do.
You may proceed.
Good afternoon, I guess it is, Senator.
Good afternoon.
I hate to have you go through this again, but I was paying attention from the back of the chamber, and so I hoped you would walk me through your amendment.
I understand that that's code for maybe not hearing the whole discussion.
Senator from the 4th, you might want to move your microphone up.
Thank you, Mr. President. So again, I didn't hear all of the inquiry from the senator from the 4th, and I thought maybe you would be so kind as to walk me through your amendment.
Yes, I'm happy to do that, and it's really very simple. Do you have a copy of the most recent Senate substitute, the one that ends in .05F?
Yes, I do.
Okay, so if you will go to the bottom of page 2, and the way I block these out is on subsection 6, line 28, so the very last line on the page.
Okay.
If you take out the language that says, or the Attorney General of this, and go to the top of page 3 and take out state, what we're doing is removing that language, which says that no longer will the Attorney General have equal footing to prosecute a case from the very outset with the municipal, prosecuting attorneys from the municipal jurisdictions or the circuit attorney of an area of our counties. So it says, as in almost every current case, the Attorney General is there when somebody calls in to the Attorney General because they cannot adequately prosecute a case, an important case. But really, the Attorney General's job is he has jurisdiction in the appellate court.
Okay.
And so we're saying, why does this kind of case, a collective bargaining case, rise to the level that we would give
the state's attorney general primary jurisdiction along with the circuit attorney or the prosecuting attorney of our counties. That's what the question is. So let's start it locally where the crime happened, where it's supposed to start, and if there is a problem and this needs to go to appeal, then the attorney general will step in. Not let's start out at the state level. Let's give our local elected authorities the ability to do their jobs.
So let's start with line 28. And I guess we're talking about the prosecuting attorneys. Let's see. Prosecuting attorney, circuit attorney with jurisdiction over the location. It's either or, right? Is that the case? Either the prosecuting attorney, circuit attorney, or.
Yes, they changed it from and, I think, to or. So one of those three, whether it's the prosecuting attorney, the circuit attorney,
who decides who's going to do that?
Well, I don't see a procedure in place for who makes that decision.
Just up in the air? It's whoever gets to it first or whoever wants to do it first?
Yeah, I think that, you know, if you're going to put something like this in place, it better be spelled out how we go about making that determination. And again, I think it's inappropriate in these kinds of cases. But even if we were to agree that it was appropriate, not that I do, but even if we were, we have no ability written in law to explain how we would determine where that jurisdiction started.
You know, again, I'm not an attorney, and so I know that I'll have a lot of questions about this, and so hopefully someone can enlighten me. But has the Attorney General of the state of Missouri ever prosecuted a Class C misdemeanor?
I don't believe that the new Attorney General has prosecuted any cases.
No, I mean any Attorney General. Have they ever prosecuted a Class C misdemeanor?
You know, that's a really great question. I doubt, you know, that's a really great question. So I would be hard-pressed to think that any state Attorney General has ever prosecuted something at that level. That's why we have local prosecuting attorneys and circuit attorneys.
Sure, that seems very odd that we're going to that step, and I don't... I'm curious, and perhaps I didn't hear the senator from Phelps, but I didn't understand the reasoning for adding the attorney general in there.
Well, what I heard him say, and you might want to ask him personally because I would hate to misquote or mischaracterize his statements, but what I think he was saying, well, there will be cases sometimes that the local authority chooses not to prosecute, and maybe they will choose not to prosecute a lot of those, and so.
I heard him say that. He didn't anticipate that there would be very many cases at all.
Well, so...
He said he looked at other states, and there were very, very few, if any, of these cases that
ever... remember, we're talking about... Yeah, we're talking about a small percentage, too, of the population here, right? So I can't imagine that there would be a lot of them, and I can't imagine that they rise to the level of bringing the attorney general in to adjudicate. I think that's the right terminology.
We'd probably have to ask the senator for the first.
Right.
Okay, so your amendment would remove the language for the attorney general.
Yes, that's what it does. It says that, you know, that's not our first line of defense for prosecuting these cases, nor should it be. We have elected prosecutors and circuit attorneys in our counties around the state. The buck stops there, and if they choose to prosecute or not, those are the decisions they need to make based on what they think the importance is, whether they have the resources for those cases versus other cases that might involve murder, for example, was one of the examples, or DWIs that we heard the senator from the first talk about, which I think are certainly crimes that I would like to see prosecuted prior to prosecuting a collective bargaining case. And when you say those are relegated to the local prosecutorial jurisdiction, but these aren't, it's really out of whack.
And I guess I'm just curious how often this happens or in what other instances we do this, and because I don't
know.
Well,
very few from what I understand, and I am not an attorney either, but who knows? Law school someday, right?
Right, that's right. Well, I think you'd be good at it, maybe.
I would like to go, but not right away.
Not right away?
Like 7 years.
7 years.
From now.
Okay.
Yeah.
I understand. Yeah, I guess and perhaps I'll inquire the senator from the first, and perhaps he can enlighten me a little more. I'm just wondering what are the other circumstances in which we've done this? And has this ever happened? And this just seems to be language, and this seems to be something that's not needed if we're going to follow what the senator from Phelps said, that this is going to happen so very rarely that we're not going to... I believe what he said was that he didn't anticipate this happening hardly ever.
Well, and so...
So then why do we then need to give
Why do we put into place a situation where we're going to be debating and fighting over who has jurisdiction and why a certain entity should have jurisdiction over another, why the Attorney General should over the local prosecutor? So I think you raised some really important questions, and I look forward to hearing the answers with you.
Okay. Thank you for the inquiry.
Thank you.
Mr. President.
Senator from the 4th.
I inquired the Senator from the 1st.
Senator from the 1st, do you yield?
I do, Mr. President.
Senator, you may proceed.
Good afternoon, Senator.
Good afternoon. I have to say I might start keeping track here. I think this is the 5th or 6th time I've been inquired of on this bill.
Well,
By various senators, in fairness. Glad to answer whatever questions I can, Senator.
I can't help it that you're obviously a very good attorney, and I am not. So...
You're a much better electrician than I am, Senator. Take that as a compliment, Senator.
I don't know if you heard the inquiry of the Senator from the 24th, but has the Attorney General of this state, to your knowledge, or any other state, ever prosecuted a Class C misdemeanor?
Sorry, say that again.
Has the Attorney General of the state, any Attorney General, to your knowledge, have they ever prosecuted a Class C misdemeanor?
Standing here, I couldn't tell you, and I'd also have to check. Actually, it's entirely possible.
Okay.
In a situation where there would be a recusal or a disqualification of the local prosecutor on a Class C misdemeanor matter, it is possible that the Office of Attorney General could get called in on that. I don't know that it's happened, but I think in theory it could.
And what are some of those reasons that they wouldn't prosecute?
At the local level?
At the local prosecutor, level, Senator,
why would
yes.
you recuse? First and foremost, if you've got a family member
it wouldn't move to a different jurisdiction? It seems to me, you know, just for me reading the paper, that there's a lot of times where the St. Louis City circuit attorney will move a case over the St. Louis County.
I think we all know of one such case, yes. That can happen, too. That can happen, too, yes.
So why wouldn't we just do that and move that over, and as opposed to burden the Attorney General with something as trivial as this?
Well, to be clear, you asked me about recusals.
Hmm. I'm sorry, I'm jumping all over the place. Keep me on track, Senator. You got to watch.
It's okay. No, it's all right. In this, I hear what you're saying. I mean, and the reality is the majority of instances where a special prosecutor gets called in, I mean, you're talking about a pretty serious felony.
Right.
Death penalty cases being the most notable. I mean, those are by and large, those are the kinds of cases we're talking about.
Okay.
And fortunately, that's not what we're talking about in this legislation.
And I did catch the tail end of what you were saying earlier, but we don't typically put this language in other pieces of legislation, adding the Attorney General in, do we?
Last time we tried it, the outcome was not pretty. I mean, it did not end well. It's really unusual to even have legislation hit the floor providing for original jurisdiction being anywhere other than exclusively with the local prosecutor.
Okay. All right, Senator. Well, I appreciate the inquiry. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. President.
Does any other senator desire to be heard on Amendment Number 2? Senator from Phelps, what purpose do you rise?
Speak on the amendment.
You may proceed.
Thank you. Mr. President, I would encourage my colleagues to vote no on this amendment. I think the Attorney General is added in there as an or, because he is the chief law enforcement officer in the state of Missouri. He can pretty much choose to enter any case that he wants whenever he wants to, or an investigation involving the state of Missouri. Do I look that his office is going to get involved in this? No, but we felt that prosecuting attorney or circuit attorney or attorney general was the appropriate way to word this. This was one of the changes that we made with the second substitute because of some concerns yesterday. So I would ask my colleagues to vote no on the amendment. Thank you, Mr. President.
Does any other senator wish to be heard? Senator from Newton.
I would ask for a roll call.
A roll call. You will need five members standing, and you have five members standing. A roll call will be granted. Does any other senator wish to be heard? Senator from the 24th, you are recognized to close.
Thank you, Mr. President. I close.
A roll call has been requested. Madam Secretary, please call the roll.
Senators Brown, Chappelle Nadal, Cunningham, Curls, Dixon, Eigel, Emery, Hageman, Holzman, Hoskins, Hummel, Kehoe, Koenig, Kraus, Leibler, Munslinger, Nasheed, Onder, Richard, Riddle, Rizzo, Romine, Rowden, Sater, Schoff, Schatz, Shoup, Sifton, Sylvie, Wallingford, Walsh, Wasson, Whelan.
Senator from the 9th. Senator from the 14th. Senator from Green. By your vote of 11 aye and 22 noes, the amendment has been defeated. Does any other senator desire to be heard? Senator from Phelps.
Mr. President, would you lay Senate Substitute Number 2 for Senate Bill 19 on the informal calendar?
Senate Substitute Number 2 for Senate Bill 19 will be placed on the informal calendar. Senator from Cole.
Mr. President, I move the Senate stand in recess until 6:30 p.m. this day.
Hearing the motion, the Senator makes the motion that the Senate stay in recess until 6:30 this day. All those in favor of that motion say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed say no. The ayes appear to have it. The ayes do have it. The Senate will be at recess until 6:30 this day.